Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
leave it in the ring.
Been a good day today, man. Been a good day for me. I don't know about you, Gabriel, but it's been a fantastic day for me. This is your host, 97 Rough, David Duenas, with Gabriel Montoya and Ernesto Gavillon. We're waiting for Gabriel to call in, and he's always running late because he's flying home to get on into his office so he can call in on leaving the ring. We got a good show. Freddie Roach, Tumor Miracon, and plus a couple other things that are going to be coming through on the radio show. SD Fights and Fight News writer Felipe Leon is going to be calling in a little bit, tell us about some things that are in the works out there, rumors that are happening in the gyms that hopefully are going to kind of revert into the ring. Always good stuff to talk about in boxing and always bad stuff to talk about in boxing. Last week on the pay-per-view Golden Boy, they had their supposedly stacked card. A lot of people were saying it was stacked. I thought it was intriguing. I thought it was going to be good, and it turned out to be fairly decent. Was satisfied. You know, some outcomes came out a little bit different than we were anticipating, than we thought was going to happen. But more or less, you end up getting the outcome that we all thought was going to be. You know, some pretty good scraps. The only one out of that whole fight card that was a little disappointing was Robert the Ghost Guerrero. To me, gave a little bit too much respect to Joel Esepio Casamayor. What was going on with Robert? And then he finally gets caught in that 10th round. He gets dropped. And it was one of those things where it was like, well, that was kind of your fault. You walked into the punch, you know. And what can you say? You know, Robert, to me, fought the wrong fight through the whole fight, unfortunately. You know, it was waiting, hesitating. He had a guy that really, honestly, was there to be taken away. His legs were no longer there. He was doing – Casamayor was a little bit more jumping in the ring than we were normally seeing him do. He's been the kind of guy really slick. Yeah, he did use his feet a lot in the past, but this was more using his feet to survive. You know what I mean, Gabriel?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I felt he was going to do. You know, I mean, coming into the fight, all the fights, you know, I picked pretty much decisions across the board except for – I didn't know what was going to happen in the Pirog Jacobs fight. We'll get to that one later. I just thought, you know, yeah, Casamayor was just a guy that was able to, you know, he's got all the old tools, you know, he's got all the tools, but now he's older. Those are the only tools he's going to use. He wasn't going to use his offense until later. You know, I thought Robert.
Hello. Are you there, brother?
did I cut out?
Yeah, you cut out for a minute and stuff. You thought Robert was what?
I just think there's a killer instinct missing there. You know, he had a guy in front of him that he hurt really bad. Early on, and he didn't test him. He didn't go after him. He didn't try to just go flurry and finish him. And you know, Casimir is a wily veteran. You don't want to just jump him. But to me, he looked like a guy on his last leg and was ready to be taken. And Robert, much like Jorge Linares, just showed a lack of killer instinct to me and didn't go after him and then led him back into the fight. And so he capped a kind of a lackluster performance, in my opinion, with getting knocked down in the last round. You know, if that would have been a 12-round fight, I really wonder what was going to happen.
You know, I'm not really sure what was going on or what was he thinking. And you know, his old man was telling him what he needed to do. It seemed to me that it could have been a little bit of, I need to reserve myself because I've been in the position of being in the right place at the right time, but not executing at the right moment type of feel to me. You know, where he was like, I got a lot of lose on the table here, you know, and I'm showing him respect. You know, he does carry still power. It would be embarrassing for myself to get KO'd, you know, and it could have been I overtrained for this fight. And my body was not cooperating what was the set plan to do, to execute. You know, it could have been a lot of things for Robert. But the one thing that
sure.
was telling for this fight, the one thing that was the obvious in this fight was you didn't bury the guy that was basically dead in front of you. The guy was dead. He was there to take, you know, to be taken out. He was there to be put in the casket, and you were there to nail the casket down and reel him all the way down 6 foot under. He didn't do any of that, you know. And that's the shitty part about the game is that, you know, you're always remembered from the last fight that you had a performance on. Fight fans are going to revive that. They're always going to throw that in your face. They're going to use that in your face, you know. So whatever the case was going on with Robert the Ghost, definitely the ghost in him, and I've called him the Phantom before, you know, rather than the ghost. The Phantom wasn't there. It was more of the ghost.
Yeah, you know, that's a fair point, dude. You know, that there's probably a lot of rust involved with Robert Guerrero. You know, a guy that's had start and stop, you know, with his career, and rightfully so, you know, with his family issues and everything. So maybe there was a little of that, you know. Just to me, it seemed like rust should just fly off when you see a guy hurt in front of you, you know, an instinct should kick in. And I was really surprised that he didn't press it, you know, and granted he's, you know, how many people have stopped Casimiro, you know, one, and he's a Hall of Famer in Marquez, you know, so it's kind of hard for me to really hold everything against him. But at the same time, you know, it's just, I don't know. I wanted something more, you know. I thought, you know, this is a moment for them to shine. And they didn't, you know,
Right. No, and they didn't, you know, and well, the good thing, though, he still took it. He's still going to have to – he's going to be able to continue his career in improving exactly where he's at 135 to 140. You know, he still has luckily, the momentum to continue using his youth and his strength in the fight game and, you know, with having Golden Boy backing him up. To continue this journey that he's going through right now to find out exactly how good is Robert the Ghost Guerrero. You know, where exactly does he stand, you know, in this game? And especially that whole pool of junior lightweights to lightweights, where exactly does he fit in? You know, is he just a decent contender that at the moment is not good enough to go against the guys that are the champions, or the guys that are going to be champions, or is he a champion? Those are questions that every fight fan, including myself, you know, and I know Robert, I like Robert, but those are questions that need to be answered. Liking a person and knowing their abilities are two different things, and that's sometimes what fight fans don't know how to separate. You like a guy, I understand that, but to really know, I mean, like, I've worked with guys, you know, and not just in the boxing world, but in the work field, you know, being a plumber. And I've worked with other plumbers where they're great dudes. You know, you go out and get a pitcher of beer and you're able to chop it up and talk this and that about life. But when you get into the work world, you know, where it counts, the guy's a shitty worker. You know, hey, where's Ted? Oh, man, he went on the bathroom break. You know, so you're not saying any lie about the guy. You're just saying, well, you know, hey, he's an all-around cat, but, dude, he is one lazy bastard. that goes
yeah, and that's,
to the boxing world, you know?
Well, I wonder, you know, with Robert, I've seen him go, you know, go off in fights. I mean, the guy's a warrior. I've actually seen him fight live quite a few times and seen, you know, a bunch of his fights. And to me, I wondered if that moment, remember when he got cut and he decided against Duard Jordan and decided not to go ahead, and there was that kind of questioning of what was going on with him, and I wonder, you know, there's inches that separate good from great, and what separates those guys that are great is a willingness to risk and a daring to be great when the spotlight's on. And, you know, you're on a major pay-per-view, you know, it was billed as Night of the Year, and everybody called it one of the best undercards, you know, to come along in a long time. I didn't agree, but that's what they called it. And, you know, that calls for a knockout and a spectacular performance and some risk. And to me, I didn't ever see Robert risk in that fight. And that was kind of my problem. I mean, you know, the guy won. I'm not going to take anything away from him. He won.
Right.
But you know, there's winning. And then, you know, let's look at it this way. Which fighter off that card is everybody talking about this week? Dmitry Pirog.
Right.
Dmitry Pirog.
Exactly, you know, and, hey, you know, I mean, this is the thing, you know, nothing against about Daniel Jacobs. I was really not really big hype on him. You know, I knew that he was one. We were talking about that. Remember, Gabriel, we were talking about off the air. And I said, you know, in a lot of ways, you feel for the kid, you know. And I know some fight fans, were, you know, they can be cruel and say, ah, F that guy, blah, blah, blah. He's exposed. But in a lot of ways, you feel for him because here you had a kid that had a lot of talent but had not peaked yet. You know what I mean? Where he was not really sure of the talent that he possessed. You know, in a way, it was like a superhero, barely figuring out what his abilities were. And you saw that with the Pyrov fight. You saw that he wasn't really quite sure what his pros and cons were in the ring. And fortunately, it was exposed by him going backwards and more or less doing what, you know, a lot of American fighters do, which they travel backwards. Like Jermaine Taylor, you mentioned that. You know, you said, hey, Dave, you know, in a lot of ways, he looked like Jermaine Taylor in that fight. And he did. He did the staggering back, you know. He was looking good on his toes, but he trapped himself where he squared himself, and he allowed Demetrius just to throw that overhand right. Well, it was not even overhand. It was straight down the pipe, and clink. It got him, and he was out. I mean, the guy was put to sleep. The only thing that was left was to tuck a pillow behind his head, give him his blankie, and that was it.
Oh, man.
It was sad. I mean, you know, it sucked. And you know, it always sucks to see a prospect really honestly get taken out of his game plan where there was hopes for him. But it goes back to the old days where that's what they did with prospects in those times, you know. Arguing not with Golden Boy, and Golden Boy, you have to applaud him in some ways, and then you kind of have to criticize him, which mean is that they've put their prospects in a little too tough at times, and then, but a lot of times we want to see him put in a little tough, you know. So it's one of those types of things.
Yeah.
It's which way do you want to weigh at?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at this. And in a sense, I agree with you. I think he was rushed to this moment. And there was a little bit of a break. Remember, he hurt his hand.
Right.
I believe it was the Smith fight. And they had to take a break. And maybe there would have been an extra fight or two in there had he not taken the break. But you look at him, and to me, somebody just – look at the way the media talked about Pyrov coming into the fight. Nobody had ever heard of him. But had never really seen him fight, but a little bit on YouTube like the rest of us. I'd gotten a couple files of him. I found a site that had a bunch of his fights. But really after the fact, I had to piecemeal a lot of stuff, talk to the guy Julian Kasdan, who we're about to have on. And really, you know, everybody slept on him, and in my opinion, including the people that made the fight, that Matt made this fight. They put him in with a guy who's 30 years old. So what does that mean? He's probably physically priming
right
at this point. You know, and that is not a fight that he was ready for. That's just what it comes down to. And it showed in there that Danny looked like a prospect trying to find himself, while, you know, Dimitri looked like a guy that knew exactly who he was, exactly what he wanted to do, and he executed to perfection. And maybe that is, you know, too good a management in a sense. You know, Al Haymon is the manager of Danny, and, you know, Golden Boy is the promoter. But I'm wondering, and nobody would answer the question, who made the matchmaking for that fight?
Who's going to want to owe up to that stuff, Gabriel? Come on, let's be honest. Who's going to want to owe up to it and put their job on the line? Because you know they're looking at each other and going like, did you match that? No. Did you match it? No, I thought you matched it. No, it wasn't me. So who matched it?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing. And you look at it and say, you know, guys, you know, this kid was not ready for this fight. And
you know,
it is as plain as that.
All jokes aside, you know? And I'm going to make a joke right now, and I got to tell you this. You know, when he got knocked out, I basically mimic Omar Henry doing the fist pumping from the, you know, from the Jersey Shore, you know, because he was sitting in front row and he was doing the fist pumping and stuff, but he was doing it all in the wrong times. He should have done the fist pumping when Jacobs got knocked out. That was the appropriate time, you know what I mean? Because, wow, it was one of those picture-perfect KOs, and it was right away put up all over the place from YouTube, from Twitter. You know, people were putting it up on their Facebook. It was just one of those type of of hits that were really, really nice. It doesn't get any better than that.
I don't know who you're talking about. I have no idea who that is.
Your boy. What are you talking about?
Well, I think the thing with Jacobs, you know, and I wonder if he's I've known Danny since his debut, you know, and I really I like him. I think he's got a lot of character. He strikes me as a good guy from what I know of him. I hope that he can come back, but it's really hard to come on a stage like that with the distraction, you know, of his grandmother just passing. And granted, I mean, you know, it's going to be hard for him to pull out.
I told you that could backfire on him, remember? I said that could backfire on him.
It could go either way, you know. I mean, some people take moments like that as inspiration; others don't. And but to me, the bottom line was, if you'd watched Dmitry Pirog and knew that he had over 200 amateur fights, had fought, you know, he wasn't the most accomplished guy in the world, but he had a lot of experience. You know, they slept on it. And it's interesting though. I was talking with Justin Fortune last night, who runs Fortune Gym, and Pirog was there at the gym, and they watched him sparring, and him and his co-trainer were like, I'm not that impressed. I mean, he's okay, but he's kind of falling for a lot of things and getting hit. And to me, it's sort of like watching Pacquiao spar. You look at him and you go, not that interesting. Like, I don't understand what the big deal is. And then you fight and you realize the guy's a gamer, that when he's in the ring sparring, he's just like a scientist trying out different things in the lab. When he gets in the ring, he puts it all together. And I think that's what people were really missing with Pirog. They didn't do their homework. This was not, you know, they picked the one, you know, European guy that probably isn't protected and doesn't fight like a standard Euro that would match up well with Danny's style. They picked a guy that was basically, you know, they might as well have picked Floyd Mayweather, because the guy was just that slick but with, like, knockout power. It was, you know, but that shows the control that Al Haymon has at HBO. And that kind of relationship that Golden Boy, Al Haymon, and HBO have, that they moved this kid to a title fight when he barely stepped up against Ishae Smith and almost lost that fight. You know, at the end, it was a closer fight than people would like to believe. You know, it reminds me of, again, Cintron fighting Teddy Reed, fighting through adversity, getting the stoppage, and then you throw him in with Margarito. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And that's how careers get ruined. And guys that were blue chip prospects, like I believe Danny Jacobs was, end up being Jermaine Taylor, a guy that, you know, he won titles and he moved very well, but I don't think he ever reached his full potential as a fighter. You know, and considering how much he accomplished, you know, that's saying something, you know. But I don't know. I mean, do you agree? I mean, do you think he was rushed? I think he was.
I think he was rushed.
That's just my take.
You know, I do think that he was rushed, you know, and it's one of those things, like I said right now, you know, a lot of our complaints as fight fans, and we do have a lot of complaints, you know, we need a big complaint box first off, because we do have a lot of complaints when it comes down to certain things in our sport, you know, and like I've said a million times, it's to us, it's not a sport, it's a lifestyle, it's a way of living and how we look at things and how we enjoy, you know, we love this sport, you know what I'm saying? So we don't, that's why we're so back and forth with it, but going back with Jacobs, was he rushed? Could he have been rushed? You know, Dmitry is one of those fighters, like I said. Dmitry is one of those type of fighters where, like you said, you know, there's nothing that's going to stand out completely about him, but there's durability. And I don't know if a lot of American fans or casual fans really understand that they have – these guys that are over the, you know, across the pond, they have solid backgrounds when it comes to amateur. You know, do they get the workman sparringship that we get here in America? No. Sometimes, in a lot of ways, they really don't need it if they're just consistent, you know. And then when they come over here, they do bathe themselves with the American styles and other styles that are, you know, around the world, so they better themselves, you know. And like you said, Dmitry's not one of those guys where you look at and go, oh, okay, you know, he's he's going to be a superstar, you know, at your first take. It's going to take a little something there for him to kind of knock the brightness out of another star. And that's exactly what he did Saturday night. You know, he
starts
another
kid. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what you do, man. You come into somebody else's house, and you better bring it. You know, I mean, think about it. The cards were 3-1 for Jacobs at the time of the loss. That's unbelievable to me. I mean, I was watching it, and Danny landed some flush shots. You know, he kind of seemed to find a rhythm a little bit later. But did you think that he was in control of that fight for 1 second?
No, I didn't at all. I thought that, you know what? Okay, here's a guy that is still trying to find his way. You know, I don't think he really knew exactly how strong Demetrius was. I don't know whether or not he was trying to size him out or feel him out, but we did know that he respected his power. And how I saw that was he was traveling backwards in that fight,
yeah.
You know, and he didn't know when the pot shot or when to stand his ground. And when you see a fighter do that, you know, that really honestly doesn't plant their feet enough to keep the other guy humble. You know, Demetri did exactly what a heavy-handed fighter or a pressure fighter is supposed to do, which is keep going forward. Push him until he makes the mistake of trapping himself. And that's exactly what, you know, Jacobs did. He trapped himself, you know, and he closed himself down, and we got the end of the result. I know there's been some talk of Kelly Pavlik is next in line, you know, that Top Rank is interested. I'm not really sold on that yet. I don't know if Kelly wants a piece of the Russian kid. I think, if anything, they're going to give Dimitri somebody a little bit different and let Kelly get in there to kind of, you know, sharpen up the tools just a little bit. And if they do, what
sure,
a big
man.
Respect. Well...
Yeah.
I've
talked with Artie Palullo from Banner Promotions this week, and that fight sounds very, very real to me, more so than Martinez. I think, I don't know, they talked about that with DiBella briefly, and it didn't, you know, they're waiting on Paul Williams to decide that, you know, he's not a welterweight at this point. HBO really wants Sergio Martinez to, you know, Williams to Martinez to. But as far as Top Rank and Palullo at Banner Promotions with Pirog, versus Pavlik, that sounds like a real fight.
It would be a good fight.
And I agree with you. I think Kelly should take something to get his feet wet after that horrible loss.
Absolutely. And you know what? The thing about that fight, though, and there's a lot of pros and cons about that fight that I got to kind of look at. One of them is obviously, you know, we don't know how good Dmitry Pirov is right now. We don't know whether or not if he's, you know... a solid guy because of Jacobs, you know. We don't know if Jacobs was a fluke, you know, which I don't think it was. But we also, what I like about it, if they do step into the ring, okay, what I do like about the fight, if it was to happen, is if you look at the track record of Kelly Pavlik, he stopped every guy that didn't have footwork, that didn't run away from him. If you have quick hands and good feet, you gave him problems. If you gave him angles, you gave him problems. With Demetrius, I don't see that. To me, it's more of a head on, almost in similar style, you know. But the only thing that could be a little different is who's fresher and who's stronger. And you got to look at the Russian kid. He's the fresher guy, the hungry guy, where Kelly is the... Is your head still in boxing? I mean, what's going on with you? That's the telling of that belt.
That's the thing. And there's, you know, I don't know if you read Steve Kim's article this week. It was an interview with Kelly's dad and Jack Lowe as well. There's a lot going on in that camp as far as they believe that he really needs a different trainer, somebody that has more world-class experience, that Kelly's a better fighter than what's been going on, and that, you know, Jack Lowe, as far as he's taken Kelly – doesn't have that world-class experience except with Kelly Pavlik. And you know, that I tend to agree with it. You know, he hasn't really gotten any better. They're added a strength coach and a conditioning guy, which, you know, any trainer worth their salt should know how to feed their fighter, keep him trained, and what gets that guy optimum, especially if you came up with him his whole career. You really should. And if you don't, then, you know, I guess you do add some people, but to me, you should have the whole skill set.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, come on. It's like, how many years of history do we have in this sport without a strength coach, without a conditioning coach? You know, I mean, I'm all for new science, like the Victor Conte stuff that he's doing now, not the steroids period. That stuff, you know, apparently works. You know, the fighters all seem very happy with it, and I'm all for it. But at the same time, to me, the one thing that hasn't changed is a good trainer can game plan, can make adjustments mid-fight, is in tune with their fighter, and knows how to prepare them for every eventuality and gives them the tools to succeed. I'm not seeing that with Kelly Pavlik right now.
Right,
and
you're absolutely
I would agree
right.
That he,
you know, but sometimes even the best of trainers that do know how to make adjustments, it really depends on the fighter. You know, if they're trained to look, I've told many times kids, you know, because I've heard, you know, practice makes perfect. Yeah, it does if you're doing it right. If you're doing it
perfect
right,
practice makes perfect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of times a particular fighter can get stuck in a mode, you know, where even when you're trying to correct it, he just can't do it. And you know, I want to move away from that topic because we got a lot of stuff. We got Amir Khan coming through. Got, you know, Freddie Roach. We had to do pre-record and stuff because Freddie couldn't make it on this particular time. We got to make the replay. And then I'll kind of roll in a little bit and prep everybody up about the Freddie Roach interview. But we got another guest that's coming through right now, and it's a friend of Gabriel and stuff. So, Gabriel, why don't you go ahead and give the introduction of who's going to be who we're calling in right now, and more or less tell everybody who he is. So, if the fight fans are not familiar with him, they're going to get familiar with him right now while I'm calling them in.
Right on. Our next guest is one of the writers in the States that is as familiar with the European boxing scene as anybody I've ever met. He understands all the players involved, from, you know, Universum to the Klitschko's, everybody. He's the guy that actually, next to Steve Kim, is the only guy I knew that picked Dmitry Pirog to win by knockout. His name is Julian Kasdan, and he writes sometimes for Doghouse Boxing, which is where we met, and he also sometimes writes for Max Boxing. Do we have him, Dave?
I believe we got him on the line with us.
Hello? I'm here.
What's up?
All right.
Yeah, not too much going on with you guys.
Julian, welcome to the show, man. Oh, not much.
Glad
just doing your introduction about the European scene. Let's just kick it right off. How did you know Dmitry Pirog was going to win by knockout?
Well, if you look at Dmitry Pirog as a fighter, he has much more experience than Danny Jacobs, and that's not to take anything away from Danny. But like a lot of Al Haymon fighters, he sort of has this progression where every now and then he'll step up, but for the most part, he'll fight a fair number of guys that are pretty middling to pretty bad. And that doesn't really test you, doesn't really prepare you for the next level. Whereas you look at someone like Dmitry Pirog, Dmitry fought a 30-fight pro in his third fight, and it was a 10-rounder. And he won that, won it convincingly, and from that point forward continued to fight guys that had decent records, that had fought against decent opposition, and to varying degrees dominated them. And then when you look at him as a fighter, he has a very complete skill set. Offensively, defensively, he's not your typical Eastern European fighter. Not your typical fighter in general. I mean, very smooth defensively. A lot of his offense is built off of that. And I just thought it was something that Danny had never seen before and probably was not ready for.
So you and I had talked a little bit, and we're a little pressed for time, so I want to kind of get right into it, Julian. You talked about the difference between the training camps in Europe versus the training camps in America. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, the Europeans really approach boxing as more of a business. And that's not to say the fighters themselves will fight with less heart in the ring. I mean, we've seen plenty of European fighters who have shown tremendous heart. But they look at boxing as a legitimate big-time sport. And as such, they will go out and they will develop, they'll promote themselves, will have full-time trainers. They will have multiple top former amateur fighters, top professional fighters in their stables, and they will have these guys sort of feed off each other in the gym, pick up little stylistic, you know, genres here and there, pick up different things that work against different types of opponents. And on top of that, you can go to a really major promoter, someone like a Sauerland or Universal, and you go to their gyms, and you'll see some pretty advanced machinery there. You'll see machines that measure their oxygen levels, things that really help you improve as a fighter, not solely on the physical side. But when you can make someone a better athlete when it comes to strength and conditioning, then it becomes that much easier to make them into a better skill athlete.
Now, there was you had talked about the gyms, how state-of-the-art they are, and versus the that they've pretty much embraced. Kind of, go ahead.
Yeah, they're very large facilities, and these are gyms that are actually maintained by the promoters. Where in the United States, a lot of the promoters just let the let trainers have their gyms, and they'll pick up fighters as they come along. The promoters in Europe, when they sign a fighter, very often they'll bring them into their gyms. And these gyms, they're very large facilities with different rooms that focus on different things. And you'll see advanced, as I said, advanced machinery there, things that measure oxygen levels, help you develop your physical strength. You know, it's sort of like a Rocky IV type scenario, albeit without, as far as I know, without the steroids. But it's modern training techniques. You know, if you go to, say, a Division I football program, you'll see the exact same things. You'll see machines that help you with specific exercises. You know, that you'll see machines that measure your PSI when it comes to your punches. And that lets you know, hey, you know, I'm punching correctly or I'm not punching correctly. How can I better get power out of what I'm doing? And once again, you could have a fighter that takes that a little too literally, someone like a Marco Huk, who's a very physically talented fighter, but he relies a little too much on his physicality. Or you'll have a fighter that understands that helps him out and then really implements the skill aspect of the sport of boxing and develops a style that's very dangerous in someone like a Dmitry Pirog or Vladimir Klitschko.
Like Pirog.
Yeah.
Now, there was a story that we were talking about that we wanted to have you on. Are you able to speak to that? Are you able to break that story now?
The issue with Universum. Yeah, Universum, which is one of the two major European promoters, the other being Sauerland, has lost its ZDF contract. For those who don't know, ZDF is to Germany what ABC, NBC, CBS are to America. And these large contracts, Sauerland has one with ARD, and K2 has one with RTL. These large contracts enable these major European promoters to sign these amateur stars, to keep trainers on full time, to fund these major facilities and put on these big shows. Without this contract, it's hard to believe that Universum can continue to service its contracts with its fighters. And it's hard to believe that Universum can continue to operate the facilities it has. These are very expensive facilities. It's very expensive to have trainers on contract. I know that, for example, Teddy Atlas, who's not the main trainer for Sauerland event, but because he's working with Povetkin, gets something in the area of $20,000 a month. So this is a lot. This kind of stuff's expensive. And without an ability to pay your fighters their potential seven-figure paydays for big enough fights, maybe even eight-figure paydays in the case of, say, Vladimir Vitali Klitschko, it's going to be very, very hard for Universum to continue to exist in the way that it has. They may not go out of business entirely, but one has to think they will no longer be one of the big European promoters.
That is crazy. Oh, wow. So, let me ask you this really quick. How does a company like this repair themselves to keep functioning, at least for the time being, before going completely under?
Well, for the time being, they have to find some way to work with networks they have not historically worked with, things like Eurosport, which is where they've traditionally put second-tier cards and small promoters. People like Spool Steinforth have traditionally worked. They'll have to find ways to work with companies like Eurosport and try to get Eurosport, which is sort of the European version of ESPN, to pay more for a fight than they normally would. They also have to go out there and find ways to work with non-German-based networks, you know, networks over in Russia, networks over in other parts of Eastern Europe and in the United Kingdom. If they cannot do that, chances are they'll probably have to offload a lot of their talent and start from scratch, basically.
So
why has this been kept so quiet? Oh, go ahead, Dave.
No, go ahead, because I was going to ask the same thing. Go ahead.
Why hasn't this been a bigger story?
Well, I think the biggest reason it hasn't been a bigger story is probably for the same reason why the Klitschko's not on American television anymore. I think for a lot of people in the United States, what happens in Europe is not perceived as being important to the world of boxing in general, which I think we all realize is not true. Boxing is an international sport. These people are called world champions for a reason. So when a promoter of this magnitude finds itself in a position where it might go under, that's a very important story, and it really should be getting a little bit more coverage.
Yeah, it's good that we were able to break it here, but we'll definitely have to write up this story.
Well, let me ask you this. If it goes under,
go ahead, Dave.
What kind of effect would that do for the Euro scene? I mean, what does it do for the fans out there? I mean, does it limit them to a lesser ground of view of people to watch it, or does it make them, the other companies that are still functioning, does it make them want to up their, I mean, basically they can basically do what the American promoters are doing at the moment, you know, doing everything on pay-per-view just to survive because they have that leverage now.
Well, if you look at the European scene, while Universum has been in a bit of a slide, they've lost a number of fighters, and they've recently lost their contract with EDF. Sauerland has been able to not only continue its contract with ARD, but also sign contracts with the main television network in Denmark, and is continuing to sort of solidify its position as the top German promoter. Now, they cannot capture the entire German market. It's simply too large of a market for any one promoter to control. But what this does is it opens up the opportunity for someone who is well-placed and who has significant capital to try and pick up some of the talent that Universum's undoubtedly going to lose and some of the amateurs that will eventually go pro that normally would have gone to Universum and sort of retake their position in the market.
Wow.
So we could potentially see an influx of Eurofighters, say if Golden Boy or Top Rank decided to pick them up and go international.
We potentially could. I mean, it would not surprise me if K2, which is already a well-placed promoter in Europe, they became aggressive and decided to sort of pick up some of this talent and put them on their cards and grow as a promoter, because they're already very well-placed. They already have a network contract with RTL. They have two marquee fighters, and the only thing they haven't really done is integrate more European fighters onto their cards. When you watch a K2 card, you'll often see guys like Jonathan Banks. And no offense to Jonathan, he's not an elite fighter. He's not a European fighter. He probably doesn't have much of a crossover over there. But they can go out there and they can pick up guys who are becoming independent, guys like Felix Sturm, and put him on their cards. And some of the guys that might eventually fall off. You never know what could happen to the Dennis Boytsovs, the Gennady Golovkins, these really good fighters who expect to get paid well and may not be able to get paid well simply because of the situation that they're now in with their promoter.
For those of you just tuning in, we're here with writer Julian Kasdan. He's breaking this story about Universum, essentially on the brink of folding. Speaking of Gennady Golovkin, he's fighting for the WBA, vacant WBA middleweight title, I think, on the 14th of August. What's your take on him?
I think Golovkin's an extremely talented fighter. Unfortunately, he's lost out the ability to have a number of fights against guys like Felix Sturm, Hassan Nadan, Ninja Kamara, how you pronounce his name, and Anthony Mundy. So fights that could have put him to that next level, that could have gotten him a title, that could have put him in a position to get a title, unfortunately did not happen. One could say that he's being ducked in many ways because the risk-reward ratio is not there. He's a very risky fight, 18-0, 15 knockouts, top-flight amateur, wins against several guys who were top-flight pros now, like Andre Ward, Lucien Boutte. And for many people, it may just not be seen as worth risk. Hopefully, he gets his shot. I know this for an interim title. If he wins, hopefully he gets a shot against maybe Dmitry Fyodorov. Maybe he gets fights against some some better fighters, like, I don't want to say better fighters, but some better known fighters, like a Paul Williams, a Felix Sturm, if he ever decides to come out of hiding, or even Sergio Martinez.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to see him, man. He's definitely a guy that's been on my list, you know, guys to watch. Well, thank you, Julian. I appreciate you coming. I wish we could keep you long. We've got another writer coming on right now. But look forward to having you back on, and let us know all the latest that's going on in the Euro scene.
Will do. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Julian. Thank you, brother. You take care.
Thanks. You too.
Well,
hey, my pleasure, man. Take care. We'll catch you next time.
Man, that's – wow. That's that's one of those things there. You know, it kind of just gets you off guard, and then, you know, well, can you – you know – Well, you know, we got our other correspondent from San Diego to Tijuana, Felipe Leon. What's up, brother? How you doing?
What's going on, guys?
Oh, man, just hanging out. You know what? It was nice and cool today. They just got hot in here in the office. I don't know if it was because of the breaking news or what, or it's because of the ladies walking by my window. It's one of those things. But what's going on with you, brother? How's everything going?
Hey, man, I just, you know, this Skype thing is pretty awesome. I'm sitting in the and TJ, you guys, I mean technology. But hey, I just got home from what I like to call the wild card of the South, which is the CREA gym down here in Tijuana, and I saw a great sparring session between, you know, the newest signee of the Espinosa Boxing Club, which is Antonio Orozco, and he went 4 hard rounds with this undefeated fighter from here from Tijuana, who's really, really good. He's actually been showcased for Gary Shaw back in February in Monterrey when DeMarco fought Valero, and Gary Shaw took a look at him. I don't know if he's going to sign him or not, but his name is Juan Pablo Cheche Lopez. Guy's 17-0 with 16 knockouts, and Orozco looked great against him. He did a little bit of an adjustment after the first round, and then he just took over. And then his last 4 rounds, he sparred with, you know, veteran Ernesto Baby Cepeda, who's going to be fighting on August 13th on Telemundo against Puerto Rican Jose Pavon, I believe, and he pretty much went to town with him. So he's looking great. Antonio Orozco is going to be actually fighting on August 26th at the Nokia Live, which I'm sure Gabriel's going to be at, and he's going to be fighting Humberto Tapia, who is a 30-fight veteran from here from Tijuana, who's fought some names out there, and it's going to be a stern test for Antonio Orozco, the newest signee of Frank Espinosa and the great Espinosa Boxing Club.
That's good, man. That's some good news right there. You know, there's some rumors, man, that, you know, you were texting me and stuff, and I don't know if you're able to speak about it right now, but Maricito, you were telling me a little bit there's a possibility of him maybe facing a fighter out there that was at one of the Golden Boy cards this past Saturday.
Yeah, Mercito Gesta, I mean, it's a rumor right now. They're talking about it. I don't know if you guys know this, but Mercito Gesta is actually promoted by Don Chargin. But now that Don Chargin has done a strategy, you know, they lined up with Golden Boy, which he has been connected. Don Chargin was connected with Golden Boy in the past as an advisor. Now he's connected with them again. You know, they're talking about maybe Mercito Gesta in the beginning of 2011 against Michael Katsidis. He's going to be fighting. He's going to be fighting Genaro Trancaso on August 20th in Tucson. It's going to be on Telefutura. And right now, Mercito Gesta is actually training at the Wildcard Gym in Santa Monica. Is that Santa Monica? Yeah. And he's doing really well there. I heard that some good things going from there. And, you know, that's something that he's actually looking forward and his management is looking forward. And I'm sure Don Chargin and Golden Boy are looking forward. Maybe a Gesta-Katsidis fight on hopefully HBO.
Wow, that's you know, that's a dangerous fight for either one of those guys. I mean, you know, Maricito is not completely known, but if he gets in there and he does his workmanship against Casillas, it's definitely going to be known from all around the world and stuff, you know. That would be a good fight. I'm not really sure if, though, Casillas would want to risk himself right now. I know we were talking about Marquez, but, hey, it'd be a great fight that if No Mercy gets a shot at, you know, one of those gut-grueling type of fighters like Casillas.
Yeah, I think it would be a great fight, too. But like you said, you know, he doesn't want to fight nobody. But who's to say that by January or February of next year, Mercito is, quote-unquote, a nobody, you know?
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. Ernie, what were you saying right now? You were texting something, brother. Go ahead and spit it out, S.A. Don't be shy.
I'm eating. The only thing I'm spitting out is my pork chops.
Wow. That is just cannibal. A really pretty picture.
Well, no, I had lunch with Katsidas and Brendan Smith, who's Katsidas' manager, and had some great talks. Michael's only eyeing the big fights, and the names he mentioned were Juan Manuel Marquez, Amir Khan, and basically that's it. And I would love to see Mercito get his shot. I think he's an excellent fighter. I saw him, you know, a couple times. I think I gave him a shout out in the very first show I was on. I don't know. I think Michael's gonna big game hunt for a while, and you know, I think Mercy's gonna have to end up going the mandatory route and getting, you know, some time to earn, you know, to quote unquote earn his shot. You know,
well,
at the big time.
You know, the beauty of it is that if you know, Casillas is looking for these big names, and let's say these big names always nowadays, they take more of a run of vacation a little longer than normal anymore. You know what I mean? Where they're like 6 months out sometimes, you know. And Marquez, you saw the face of Marquez. I mean, it was just literally beat up, you know. And it could be because of going up in weight and then coming down in weight, you know, where it affected his body a little bit. But as you can tell right now, his body is in need of rest. So Casillas Marquez, I don't know whether Casillas age exactly, and age has a lot to play with it. But where I'm going with this is that Casillas may have to have a fill-in fight, you know, somebody fill in the spot there so he doesn't get ring rust, he doesn't lose his timing, and could be a great possibility that Marcito gets that shot, you know, as a guy that they're looking to give him rounds, not expect a whole lot, where fans are not going to know anything about him and go like, ah, who's this guy, you know, and, you know, Casillas is going to knock him out and end up having rolling around one of those great fights.
But to counter that, I think if he takes on a stay in between fight, I think Gesta would be the wrong opponent.
I think so too. Yeah.
So
you know, that's the thing. You know, Michael is
getting that would be rare, simply because I think Golden Boy is aware of Mercy. He's in San Diego where they picked up, Frank Espinosa picked up Orozco. So you know they're familiar with the area and they've actually had shows there before too. So I think they are familiar with Mercy, and I don't think they would throw Katsidas in there with someone this tough if they wanted him to keep busy.
Yeah. Strong possibility, exactly. Hey, Felipe, it's always good to have you on, brother. You got anything else for us, man?
Yeah, just tomorrow on Showtime, Chula Vista fighter from here from Chula Vista, Christopher Martin, will be going against Chris Avalos. And, you know, I don't know
too, is like,
what's that?
The guy that swells a lot. Him taking a tough action fight like that, you know, if he takes a tough action fight like that, he could get injured, he could get cut, and he could lose that big fight that he's looking for. I don't think, as much as I think he's improved, I like Michael as a fighter, I don't think the shelf life is that long, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think they want to move him to a big fight, get that big payday so they can secure a future for him outside the sport.
I agree with you, man. You know, and going back with No Mercy is he's fresh. You know, he's one of those kids that
he's fresh.
You haven't seen a whole lot of him, but what I've seen of him, the last time we talked about him was, I was, okay, he doesn't have a lot of KO under his punches right now, on his record, you know, but his last fight showed me he's one of those guys that are kind of trying to find himself, and he's one of those guys is sitting on his punches a little bit more, where he can cut Casillas and make it one of those type of fights where Casillas is going in not just against a guy that's in front of him that's got good hand speed and has got good power, but he's really fighting himself in that belt, you know?
For me, I think that a Michael Casillas fight can be the Mercito Hesta signature fight. You know, we've seen him. We haven't seen him fight any big names. He's kind of fighting these Telefutura, you know, opponents.
Right.
And if he does get a shot against Michael Casillas, you know, that could be his signature fight where it actually – really puts him in the radar, you know, puts him on the boxing radar. You know, if Amir Khan and Juan Manuel Marquez fight each other, who's there in Golden Boy left for Michael Casillas to fight? Victor Ortiz? I mean, they might just, you know, say, well, let's give this Hesta kid a shot. And if he wins, then we have him. And if Casillas wins, then we have him too. And let's just see what happens. I mean, it could be a boxing after dark semi-main event, you know? And then whoever whoever wins, they're going to have, and it's going to be a marketable guy.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's very possible.
Very
you know?
Possible, and it's something that we would love to see.
Well,
I'd love to see, you know?
Gabriel, you know, I don't know if you know much about Christopher Martin, but how do you see that fight, you know, playing out against Chris Avalos? I mean, a lot of people think that Chris Avalos is going to be able to walk right through Christopher Martin because of the lack of power that Martin has. But how do you see that fight, bro?
You know, that's a very good fight. I actually have not made my pick. I'm writing my mailbag now where I put all my picks in it. I'm trying to find more tape on Martin. Steve told me a lot about him, Steve Kim. And it's a guy with technique that's able to turn and get kind of solid punches out of that turn. You know, he'll turn, you turn into it, and boom, he lays the leather on you. Avalos is a guy that has no defense, and I heard that he got dropped in the gym by a young up-and-coming prospect. I won't name him. And you know, he's a guy that doesn't have a lot of defense.
Tell me after. Tell me
so
after.
I will. On any given night. in order to grab a name. But I will put it in the chat. I can't type and speak at the same time. But Avalos is a guy that you know, he doesn't have any defense. And so on any given night, he can be beaten. And I haven't seen him really go late into a fight. I don't know how that power is going to be in round 10 when he's dealing with a speedy guy who likes to move, who uses technique. So it's going to be really interesting. I lean towards Avalos, but you know, Chris Martin, I don't know. You know, we'll see.
Well, let me tell you what I've seen is, you know, Christopher Martin, he's a smart guy, very smart inside the ring and outside of it too. He's a big 118 pounds. He hasn't fought at 118 pounds in quite a while. He's actually fought a lot at 122. He's the California State Bantamweight Champion. And in his last fight, he fought at 126. He's a big guy for that weight class, and he's quick. And what I've seen of Chris Avalos is, yeah, that he doesn't have a lot of defense. So if Christopher Martin can take the punch, which he has a good chance, I see him going the 8 rounds, and maybe he could squeeze by, you know, with a split decision or unanimous decision, depending on the judging, you know. But I think that Martin can, you know, do an upset.
I think so too. You know,
it's interesting about Avalos.
Flat out, I think Martin beats him.
Yeah. Really.
Wow. I don't see enough in Avalos to impress me at all.
No, it's too raw, you know. And what's interesting about Avalos and with this fight is that with the Super 6, one of the things at the 118 level, one of the alternate opponents, if Montiel and Donaire fell through, the name that was being thrown out was Chris Avalos. It's a very possible they wanted to put in.
Too soon.
Way too soon.
Imagine Avalos against Joseph Agbeko or Johnny Pettis. I mean, what happened there?
Oh, my God. Or Abner Morris or any of them, you know. I've also heard that Hazumi Hasegawa might be a part of that, too. So,
well, according to my source, Hasegawa is very interested in coming to the U.S. His team is very interested in coming to the U.S. It was up to who the participants were. And then I think when the window kind of closed, Hasegawa stopped becoming interested simply because, you know, they didn't want to wait too long, so. That's probably what happened with Hasegawa.
That sucks.
That's a bummer. Yeah, it was looking like a tremendous performance or a tremendous tournament, man. Still is. Jeez, we got four good fighters. I mean, it's going to be awesome if it does happen.
I wish that Montiel and Donaire would really jump in there, because that would really make it, you know, awesome. I mean, it's
awesome
good right now
back
with the four fighters, but with Montiel and Donaire, and with their followings in the Filipino Mexican community, I mean, it would be huge. It would be bigger than the Super 6, in my opinion, and the Super Middleweight.
Right, right.
Without question, Felipe. And you know, this is a thing that really pisses me off, is that, okay, if Top Rank and Golden Boy does it too, wants to keep it in-house and only fight their own fighters, that's one thing. They're putting on shows, and we get to see them. But when you deny boxing fans the kind of clarity that this tournament would offer, the 118-pound division, which is one of the most stacked divisions in the sport, I got to call foul. That's a bunch of bullshit, in my opinion.
I agree with you.
Keep those two guys out.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And
yeah,
then for Bob Arum to say, you know, I don't want to give anybody a free ride. None of these guys, Abner Mattis, Joseph Gemko, you know, they wouldn't, Victor Shinian, they wouldn't be getting a free ride because they'll be getting the following that the Showtime Super 6 tournament will bring, you know. So it's not a free ride that Showtime's going to be bringing the biggest names or anything like that. I mean, that's like you say, you know, I really wish that Bob Arum reconsider and really do something for the boxing fans.
You know, the only thing I can come up with why Bob Arum is not doing this, he's looking at it like, wait, I can put my other guys on pay-per-view. I can, you know, keep putting these Latin Furies and keep all the proceeds to me. You know, why am I going to do that? He's affecting the tournament or he's affecting the sport by doing it like that. And it's
well, here's an interesting aspect that I kind of thought of, too. We all know about the Super Six, the Super Middleweights. The one odd man out is Lucien Boutet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how popular and how mainstream has Lucien Boutet been since the Super Six started? He's the one who has been talked about just as much as the points leader in the Super Six because one, he's being impressive, knocking out these guys who are outside of the Super Six like Miranda and Labrador Andrade, and two, he's starting to emerge as the heir apparent to the winner of the Super Six. So his star, excuse me, is on the ascent. Bob could play this carefully and smartly and keep bringing Donaire along to the point where once the Super Six is over, and it only took, what, for this one, it took about, 18 months to complete? At the end of this third, Donaire's star power could be that to where he could be the heir apparent to fight the winner of this 118-pound tournament.
At the same time, though, I've seen Glacier's moved along quicker than the way Bob has been moving Donaire along. He's fighting bomb after bomb, or not bomb, but, you know, guys that he should beat, guys that are way smaller. I don't see his profile being raised. And you talk to Nonito, he's not happy with the way they're moving him. The kind of fight that he wanted, and now he's not going to get him. I don't really understand it. 118 money, you know, it's a good point if Bob moves that way, but if he just moves the way that he's been moving with Montiel and Donaire, to me, I don't see how the public clamors for those guys.
Right.
Felipe?
You
said you had a couple points that you wanted to hit?
Yeah, let me hit them real quick. Just so you guys know, I don't know if you guys saw the news, but Antonio DeMarco from Tijuana by way of Los Mochis is ranked number one again in the lightweight division, and Humberto Soto is the champion. Now, Humberto Soto has a voluntary defense in September, which he's going to probably do September 4th. Somewhere in Mexico, they haven't set the venue yet. He is training here in Tijuana. He wasn't at the gym today because he's doing some promotion down in Mexico City. It's probably going to be against a Colombian, but after that, more than likely, he's going to vacate that 135 pounds. Antonio DeMarco and Humberto Soto would never, ever fight each other. They're from the same town. They've known each other all their lives. They're trained by the same family, which is Romulo Quirarte and his two sons. So do not expect Antonio DeMarco and Humberto Soto to face each other for 135-pound WBC belt. And the last point is Juan Carlos Burgos, the featherweight, who's ranked number one by the WBC, who's here from Tijuana, is probably going to face Johnny Gonzalez in an elimination bout later on this year. Rumor is that he's not too happy with his contract with Thompson Boxing and he's waiting to get out of it. So as you guys may or may not know, if a promoter gets you a title shot and you win, their contract gets extended automatically. So that's what they're trying to push on to get him that title fight so that way their contract extends, or that's what, you know, I'm guessing. So we could see a Burgos-Johnny Gonzalez elimination bout pretty soon here, probably in September or in October, and then with the winner going after Elio Rojas at 126 pounds.
That sounds great, brother. Ooh, can't wait for stuff to come to and stuff. Hey, Felipe, it's always great, brother, for coming on, our correspondent from San Diego and from Tijuana, south of the border. Can't wait to have you on again, brother. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, man. Check me out on Twitter, /SDFights.com, on FightNews.com, and MyBoxingFans.com. Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Absolutely, brother. I know we got our first guest on the line with us, Amir King Kong. Are you there, brother?
Yeah, man.
How you doing, man? How's everything going for you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, it's been going really well. You know, I'm just having a long break. Hopefully, I'll be fighting around December time. So I'm just chilling out and just enjoying myself.
Now, Amir, you're saying around December time, and, you know, I was talking to Freddie Roach yesterday a little bit about it. And, you know, he was mentioning it doesn't look like it's going to be Marquez, but do you want to fight Marquez? I mean, or do you want to fight one of the guys right now that really honestly are at their peak?
You know, yeah, I'll fight anyone, you know, in the days, if it's the right fight, I've given the right instructions to Golden Boy, I told Richard, I'd give him a list of names, you know, I want to fight the likes of Bradley, Madonna, I want to fight the likes of Ortiz and the big, big names in the category. So, you know, Richard's going to get all the names and get all the, you know, he's going to get everything together and hopefully give me the package and tell me which is the right fight at the right time. End of the day, you know, people know boxing is a business as well. And, you know, if it tallies up at the right time, you know, that the right fight is for me against Bradley or the right fight against Timothy Bradley then or the other guy, Devin Alexander, then we're going to take that fight. But the fight has to make sense. You know, financially and in other areas as well.
Amir, let me ask you this, you know, and I got my other two co-hosts with me right now. I got, you know, Gabriel Montoya from Max Boxing and Ernesto Gavion from Everlasting Boxing Scene. My question to you is this, is the big thing about what every fight fan's always talking about, they're always bringing up the fact about your chin, you know, the whole Prescott thing. And Devon Alexander is one of those guys that are long, you know, rangy, and it's got a good right hand, and it's strong, basically. If you were to take that fight, is it more of a, I want to prove to the world, because, you know, Timothy Bradley doesn't have the biggest punch in the world. Take a fight with Alexander, is it one of those things where I want to shut everybody up already about chin? I want to prove that I can take a shot, and I can continue. It was one of those things, I messed up, I was young, I went out there, and I fought the wrong fight.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think since the defeat, if you look at the way I've progressed and the way I've learned from it, you know, I think I'm a total different fighter. You know, I think in everyone's career, you know, fighters get knocked down or they get knocked down, and that happened to me. You know, I got beat, I got knocked down, and you know, where people say that Amir Khan's chinny, I think, you know, there's nothing chinny, but I think if Prescott hit anyone at that weight, it could have been Devin Alexander or Timothy Bradley or anyone. I think he would have knocked him out. But the thing is, you know, he caught me cold, caught me early in the fight, and, you know, he ended up beating me up. But, you know, it's one of them things. One punch can change a fight, and it did on that day.
And let me correct myself. I mean, about Alexander, he's a lefty, you know. I just threw I don't know what
yeah,
I was
know,
thinking.
I love fighting lefties. You know, I think I'd be a great fighter. But, a lot of people wrong. You know, I've been fighting a lot of lefties in my whole professional career. I think I fought about four at the moment. And in the amateurs, you know, if you look at the Olympic Games, I fought the five fighters, four were lefties. So, you know, I don't really mind that. Spiro Manny Pacquiao, who also is the current best fighter in the world, and he's a lefty. So, you know, I have no problems with Sarpos.
Amir, hey, it's Ernie from Boxing. It was great meeting you over the weekend. my question to you is you do a lot of travel now. You have to commute from the UK back to Hollywood and so forth. Does it play a factor into your fight regimen? It can't be easy as far as, you know, the physical toll that it takes on you.
Definitely. It's quite tough because you're flying back and forth and, you know, your body's tired and everything. But, you know, it's a sacrifice you have to make in boxing. And if I want to be the best, then I'm going to make these decisions. You know, but in a way it works out quite well for me because in England, you know, as you know, it's quite hard for me to live there because, you know, I'm one of the lucky ones where every corner you turn, everyone you speak to, they know who Amir Khan is. You know, even non-boxing fans know who Amir Khan is. And, you know, sometimes you need to get away from that. You know, you have to get away from that scene and you need to get away and train hard and focus. So America is a nice place for me to come to, you know, where walking to the gym, then your respect in the gym is to do well, you know, to do really good and train hard. That's how you earn your respect. Where in England, it may be different and also you've got the quality of training, quality of sparring.
You've talked about the commute and how tough it is. Now, you just had your first fight in the U.S. It drew well, got rave reviews. Everybody was really impressed at not only you taking it to an ex champ, but the manner in which you took it to an ex champ. Does that, you know, is that the groundwork for you becoming a U.S. star? Or are you going to be one of those?
Yeah, if you look at all the fighters from England, Ricky Hatton and Joe Calzaghe, you know, they took the time to come to America and they made their name quite late. But the thing is with me, you know, I'm so ambitious, you know, I want to become one of the best fighters in the world. And pound for pound, one of the best fighters to do that is to come to America and fight all the best over here. So that's the reason, you know, I come over here for such a young age. And it's not only that, you know, it's not only about winning the fights, but it's winning in a good style. So again, the fight against, Paulie Malignaggi, you know, I only didn't win that fight, but I won it in a good style. And, you know, and I think I just showed the world, you know, how good Amir Khan is. And in the future, there's bigger fights for me. And, you know, I just want to put the best performances on. And I want to show, you know, the American fans, boxing fans out there, how good I am. Hello.
Hi, Amir. This is producer David Chen. Yeah. I think we're getting some technical troubles right now. We're waiting for them to call back in. You just give us 1 second, okay? Amir, while we wait and we have you on the air, why don't we just get you to talk about your opinions on the 140-pound weight division right now? You know, who do you think are the best guys in the division? Who do you like? Who do you dislike? You know, just give us your opinions on the fighters in your division.
The top five. Well, you know, I think in the top five you've got myself. You've got Tim Bradley. You know, I think he's fought some good fights, and you've got Demon Alexander, so, you know, and also Maidan and Victor Ortiz. You know, you've got some good names in there. You know, the 140-pound category is one of the best categories in the world, you know, the best divisions. But, you know, I have to say, you know, people said to me, oh, I mean, he's proved himself to be at the top of the division. But Demon Alexander hasn't. You know, he's fighting someone who Amir Khan has beaten. You know, you look at Timothy Bradley, you know, anyone, you know, whoever Timothy Bradley has beaten, you know, I know for a fact I'll beat them or knock them out. So, you know, when people say to me, I'm not fighting anyone, you know, who are they fighting? You get me? So, you heard after when I fought, after the Malignaggi fight, I said, you know, I'd like to fight anyone. I'd want, if they keep talking a big fight, I'd fight Madonna next. Let Timothy Bradley fight them and others, and then the winner fights the winner. But, you know, nothing come through that.
But at the moment, when you look at somebody like Timothy Bradley and Devin Alexander, obviously they talked about fighting each other for a while, so maybe you didn't let them have that conversation. But obviously that fell through for his own reasons. What do you think about these two guys? I mean, do you in a way feel like it's not the right time to step in with either one of them for some reason? Because you yourself mentioned names like Marquez and Maidana.
Sorry?
Well, the names Bradley and Alexander too much because they were talking about possibly fighting each other. So I'm assuming you just let that be its own situation. But now that they're not fighting each other, they moved on, they're making their own individual fights. They're not fighting each other at the moment. Do you think you want to fight these guys? Or maybe
I've always said, you know, I want to fight the best fighters in the world. And, you know, I want to fight the likes of Bradley and I want to fight the likes of Alexander. You know, that's the way I am. You know, I'm a warrior. I wanna fight the best and beat the best. I wanna unify the division, then I need to fight the best. So you know, that's the type of person I am. You know, I've never avoided a fight. I never avoided anyone, and I wanna fight the best out there.
Well, you saw Juan Manuel Marquez's fight against Juan Diaz, their rematch this past weekend. What did you think of that performance?
I really think, you know, Marquez had a great performance. He's a great fighter still. You know, where a lot of people thought after the Mayweather defeat, he might have lacked, you know, confidence or anything. But you know, he boxed really well. He looked sharp. And for how old is he? 37 years old or something. You know, for a fighter that age, you know, I'm not seeing many fighters who can maintain the fitness and the fight pace at that level.
Do you see anything with your fighter's eyes, your trained eyes? Do you see any difference in Marquez's performance, having gone up so much weight to fight Floyd Mayweather and losing that fight, and now having to come back down, especially at his age?
Oh, but Marquez.
Yeah.
You know, I think Marquez is just a technical fighter, and he's got a great trainer with him as well. And you know, he's just a very dedicated fighter. I think it's up to the fighter individual. He's a very dedicated fighter, and if he has the, you know, willpower, and if he wants to be the best fighter in the world, and still be a world champion, then you know, even after a defeat against Mayweather and moving up and down weights, well, you know, he's still the same fighter. You know, and I think he's proven that in the last fight against Diaz.
How much contact do you have with Freddie Roach and also your sparring mate Manny Pacquiao right now? Do you have any idea about what they're trying to do? I know Manny is very busy right now, but is that a relationship you still keep open to a certain degree? Do you keep the channels open to try to check in with Manny and Freddie to see what they're doing?
Yeah, me and Manny are good friends. You know, we speak to each other before fights, and he sends me messages before, you know, when I fight, and I send him a message before he fights. So the relationship there is quite well, you know, quite good. You've got Freddie Roach, who I speak to quite oftenly, you know, about training camps and stuff and the way things are going to work. Even when I'm in the UK, I make sure everything's going okay, and I give him a call now and then. So yeah, we all stay, you know, in contact. And I think, you know, when you're in a training camp with the likes of Manny Pacquiao and Freddie Roach and everyone, you need to keep speaking to each other, keep that friendship going, because, you know, at the end of the day, we work with each other, and you know, it just makes things easier when you get there to training.
Hi, Ramir. I believe we got Gabriel Montoya back on. Gabriel, are you there?
Yeah,
Gabe, you're on the air. Go ahead, take it.
Hey, Amir, how you doing, man? I haven't seen you in a while over at the Wild Card. How you been?
I'm good, thank you.
Congratulations, first off, on the Paulie Malignaggi win. I thought it was as good as you've ever looked.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about the progression? You've been with Freddie, I think it's four fights now. Can you talk about how you feel you've progressed under his tutelage?
Yeah, you know, I think with Freddie, since I've been, you know, in the same camp as Manny and everyone, I think you could see the difference in me. You know, my style, the way I fight, the patience, you know, using my brains. Whereas before, when I was in England, I used to go in there with a big heart, try knocking everyone out, you know, not thinking about the techniques or anything, not going into a fight with a game plan. But now I'm totally different. You know, now I'm more mature when I go into a fight. I pick the right game plan, pick the right shots, and I know when to attack, when not to attack, and when to defend. You know, before I had no defense. My defense was all over the place. But now, you know, you can say I'm an all-around fighter, and I'm only improving. You know, there's still a lot of improvement. And, you know, every fight we're just getting better and better.
Yeah, I'm back. We're back online and stuff. So I apologize about that. I don't know what happened. It just threw us right off and stuff. But go ahead, Gabriel.
I noticed that, actually. Your technique seems tighter to me, Amir. Particularly, you really keep that right hand on when you're jabbing. That right hand really stays on your chin. Your defense has improved. The thing that there are a lot of fans, you know, Twitter and the forums and all that. There's been some criticism just regarding the future
Hello?
Opponents.
Hey.
You're online. Just one second there, Ernie. I'm in mid-question. The criticism is that you're something of a protected fighter. Now, do you think that's a fair criticism, considering you're only a few fights removed from a knockout loss and you're kind of rebuilding? Do you think it's fair?
Yeah, it's unfair, you know, sometimes when you think about it, because, you know, he shows you how good of a fighter he is when he comes back from a knockout ladder, and I've proved the way I come back. You know, I've come back and I won a world title, and I've become a better fighter, and, you know, I think I'm a better fighter, and I know I'm a better fighter. So the criticism just motivates me, to be honest with you. You know, it gives me the extra push. So when I do go and fight, you know, and when I am training, it just gives me the extra push. So, you know, they can say all they want, but at the end of the day, you know, I know the way you know, as long as whoever they put in front of me, I beat. That's the main thing, you know. I just face everyone who's in front of me, and they can all, I'll always get that criticism. But the reason I get that criticism is because I must be someone or must be achieving something good. There's a lot of jealousy in this game as well, so, you know, you get that as well. And so, and me being a young 23-year-old world champion, you know, you never get that in boxing nowadays, you know, especially in the one of the best divisions in the world. So, you know, I see it's a lot of jealousy as well, and, you know, there's a lot of criticism, but like I said, the criticism just gives me that extra push and gives me that motivation.
Sorry, Dave.
Go ahead.
Do you think it's fight fans' impatience? I mean, you're only 23. You just got your first world title. Do you think they always want everything right now?
Definitely. You know, I think, you know, when I turned professional, just after the Olympic Games, they wanted me to fight for a world title straight away. You know, I needed fights to build myself. I needed some fights to build me up. But now, you know, I'm 23. You know, as soon as I won the world title at 22, you know, they were saying, oh, you should fight Mayweather, or why not fight Manny Pacquiao and the big names. I'm like, I'm only 22. You know, I've just won a world title. So that's the thing. You know, with some people, they don't have that boxing knowledge. But, you know, with me, whoever they put in front of me, I'd fight. You know, I'm a fighter, I'm a warrior, you know, one of them guys. You know, boxing is what I do best, and I'd fight anyone who's Golden Boy or my promotion team puts in.
Khan, you know, when you came here to the States, you know, and, you know, obviously you've been spending a lot of time here in the States, what was the change of momentum in your opinion? You know, I know the wild card has a variety of different fighters flooding in the gyms, but do you feel that if you would have stayed in the UK, if you would have stayed in England, do you feel your confidence build would be at the where it's at right now, particularly in the way you're feeling?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think by moving and training in America, it's made a massive difference. And, you know, in England, the quality isn't as good as the American training. You won't get the same sparring. You won't get the quality of sparring. And I think it's the training here what's made me a better fighter. And also, you know, that defeat, I think, in a way, it made me a better fighter. You know, I tasted defeat, and I knew, you know, I can't make a mistake again. And if I want to be the best, I better sort myself out. And that's the reason I moved to America. And now I spend so much time over here. You know, I think the American fans and those people who give me criticism, I think they should be happy that a world champion and a great, good fighter has moved from England, fighting in England, training in England, has moved to America. You know, I think it's good for American boxing. You know, when people see like me, who used to fight in England, has started to fight in America. So I think it's great for boxing. You know, I think it's made a massive difference in my career, you know, by moving to America and training over here and fighting over here, because, you know, America is the place you want to be. America is the place where, you know, big fighters make a big name, and I'm one of the guys who wants to make a big name in this career.
Absolutely, brother. You know,
hey, Amir, it's Ernie. I got to ask, because you did a photo shoot. What's with the gold outfit?
I'm one of them guys, man. I like my outfits, man. every fight, I pick a different outfit. And when I fought for the world title, I always said I want to fight in a pit. You know, so yeah, that's the reason, man. But no, I like to find all different colors and different designs, and I've gone to a suede design. So I want to bring something else in the game. You know, I want to bring, you know, a bit of fashion into boxing as well.
Hey, well, let me ask you this real quick. Is that why, with the rapper now following you around, you got that entourage look and stuff, you know? I mean, how did that come about, man? Amir, how did that come around? Because when I met you, when you came down to the States, you were more shy.
I'm still a shy guy. You know, I'm still very respectful, and, you know, I'm a quiet guy. I'm not one of them to run my mouth and say, oh, my name's Amir Khan. And, you know, I'm not one of them guys. I'm very quiet and shy, and people still think I'm shy after being a world champion. I think that's the best way to be, but no, I've made a friend who's a music artist, and he made a song for me called It's Amir Khan, and it's about when I walk out the ring, and, you know, it's a good fight tune, you know, and I use it when I walk out for fights, but you know, and I want to look after people, you know, so, you know, because he's looked after me by making me a music for my entrance, I want to look after him, and I took him to the Marquez fight also him, you know, being big in the Mexican community. This fight was a massive fight between Marquez and Diaz in the Mexican community. So I thought I'd take him along with me, and you know, he'd be happy as well, and it'd be good for him.
Absolutely. Hey, you mind if we pan some fight fans that want to ask you a question?
Yeah, fine. Yeah.
Okay. Let me get area code 631. You're on live right now with Leave It in the Ring and Amir Khan. Go ahead and ask your question, brother.
Hey, Amir, I just have a question for you. I'm your fan, and I'm from Long Island, New York. You have Madonna as your mandatory challenger. So how come you're not fighting Evans? I guess I'm Manuel Marquez. Why him?
Sorry, can you repeat that question? Because I just couldn't hear you properly. Sorry.
All right.
Do you want to repeat it?
Madonna is your mandatory challenger. How come you're not fighting him and you're going after Marquez right now? Everybody wants you to fight Madonna. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I'm
I'd love to fight Madonna. You know, like I said, I gave the instruction to Richard. I said, these are the guys I want to fight. And he thinks at this moment in time, the Marquez fight would be a good fight for me, you know, financially. And, you know, it'll make me, I think, a bigger name. I think at this moment in time, Marquez is a lot bigger name than Madonna. And if I want to build up my, you know, if I want to build up my name in America, I think Marquez is the name we want to beat first. I don't think Madonna has the name yet. Not many American boxing fans, well, maybe a few boxing fans know him, but not many Americans know him, or not, especially English people, don't know who Madonna is. So the fight won't generate that much money. So end of the day, like I said, boxing is a business as well. But the fight will happen in the future. You know, I'm not turning away from that fight. Like I said, I'll fight anyone. But that fight will happen definitely in the future when Marquez is a bit well-known, and then it'd be a bigger fight.
Amir, it's Gabe again. When you first were going for your title at 140, you would talk to that you wanted to, one, defend your title, but two, that you thought maybe you could go back to 135. Have you now settled into 140?
Yeah, you know, when I was making the 135 division, I had to kill myself, and you know, I'm such a dedicated fighter. When I have to make a division, you know, if I have to make weight for a division, I'd make that weight. So even if I was told by my trainer to make 135, I'd make the weight by myself, and that's what I used to do. But since I've been 140 pounds, you know, I feel so much stronger, and you know, taking shots easy, and you know, giving shots back, and feeling strong doing full round distance. So I think this is the ideal weight for me. You know, I'm not killing myself making the weight. I'm making the weight, and I feel nice and big and strong at it.
Is there, more than any other opponent, is there one that really speaks to you other than Marquez that you really want a piece of? I mean, this is a really hot division, and a lot of guys have called you out.
It's a hot division. You've got some big names in there. You know, you've got Bradley. I think that would be a good fight for me. You know, you've got Devin Alexander in the future. That would be a massive fight as well. You've got Victor Ortiz. You've got...
Would Bradley be the... Amir, let me ask you this, you know, and I don't know if you've ever noticed Amir Khan coming to America, Amir Khan, you know, I don't know if you ever caught on to that. I caught on to that. But, you know, Timothy Bradley, wouldn't he be the legitimate guy to face, though? I mean, isn't he the one right now who a lot of people consider, including myself, the best 140-pounder out there in the division? Wouldn't that solidify, you know, you being the top dog? You beat the man. Right?
Yes, I think the reception is really, really bad on this point.
I said,
I think you scared him away with your call.
Hey, do you want to try to get him back, or do you want to call?
Yeah. Let me just text and tell them to let's get him back, and then at the same time, we will call.
That's fun.
Who was it that we were going to call?
We're going to call Alex Campanovo from Thompson Boxing. He had heard the story about Juan Carlos not being happy and wanted to clarify the situation.
Oh, okay. We also have at 6:30, we have Mo Harris coming in, and then we still have the Freddie Roach interview as well. Just to...
Who?
Yeah.
Freddie Roach?
I'm kidding.
And I think we got really quick. Let's just patch her in. Serafina, are you there?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Okay. Good to hear your voice.
I know. It's been a minute, you know, since I've spoken to you or even seen your face around, you know. You've been hiding out.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Let me call Alex.
Been hanging out at the Hit Factory, you know.
I know. You know what? I want you to tell me a little bit about the Hit Factory. And, well, why don't you go ahead and do it now while I'm calling Alex. And I know you want to kind of talk to Alex a little bit about what he wants to talk about. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, the Hit Factory is a new gym in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's been opened about 3 months. And Hit Factory stands, an acronym stands for Hidden Individual Talent, boxing being an individual sport. And it was created by a William Haney, and he started the gym because his son, Devin, 11-year-old amateur fighter, is just extremely talented. So he started a gym, and we had a at first, we had Jeff Mayweather, Yoel Judah, and then I brought in Eddie Mustafa Muhammad to come and train a couple fighters over there, and he brought
Hello.
In the crew.
Hello.
Hey, Alex, how you doing? This is Dave with Leaving the Ring. Can I put you on hold for just a minute, Alex? Because I got Amir
sure.
Khan back with us. Amir, you with us?
Hey, back with you, man.
I'm sorry to say that.
I said, Alex, I'm going to put you on hold for a second because I got Amir Khan back on the line with us. Amir, really quick, you know, before I lose you again, because it sounds like you still have that bad reception and stuff.
Yeah.
Timothy Bradley is right now considered the man to beat at 140.
Right.
Now, yeah. Marquez is kind of a guy that's kind of on his way out. Why not make the fight? The fight with Timothy Bradley looks a little bit more sensible. Why not make that fight happen first?
I'd love to fight. You know, like I said, I've given the instructions to Golden Boy, which is Schaefer. That's what the reason I come back to LA from Vegas. And I want to fight. You know, I'd love to fight Bradley because I know I've got the style to beat that guy. So, you know, we need help. My team are going to support the team and, you know, get the fight on because at the end of the day, you know, I ain't winning scared. I know he's been saying on Twitter and he's been saying on, you know, boxing websites and his trainer, Gary Shaw, well, the promoter, Gary Shaw, has been saying all sorts. But look, you're hearing it from me. You know, I want to fight that guy and I want to show everyone in America, you know, how good I am. And, you know, the way I beat Timothy Bradley, you know, he thinks, you know, he's the best in the division. Come on, let's see if he's the best in the division.
Absolutely. Well, Amir, I appreciate you calling back in, man, so we can get that last question in. I'll talk to you again, brother. And be safe in L.A.
Take care, champ.
Take it easy. Now, back. Is that? Okay, so, Alex, are you on the line with us, brother?
I am here.
How you doing, man? So you wanted to call in really quick to speak to us about, and I guess, you know, clear up something that was being talked about, right?
Well, first of all, I'm happy to hear that Redcar has instructed Golden Boy that he will like to fight Timothy Bradley, who we also represent.
By
the truth of the matter, though, is that even though he's instructed the people at Golden Boy, I don't think they're eager to make that fight so fast. I think they're going to take their some other fight in December or so over there in the UK. And hopefully that fight will take place in the near future.
I'm hoping that it happens And before the year ends. That's a fight I like to see.
Exactly. We would like to see that, though. And, you know, we wanted to fight Amir a long time ago. Timothy was ready since last year when he beat Lamont Peterson. We're very close to making that fight when he was still with Frank Warren, but things went away when he signed with Golden Boy. So we'll see what happens. We're not holding our breath. Timothy Bradley has a lot of options out there, and then we're going to take one of those at a time.
And you know what, man? I completely forgot. Ernie just reminded me. You guys do represent him, Timothy Brad. Ernie, see, you're supposed to have my back, Ernie. You're supposed to jump in.
Hey, you know what? My good friend Alex Campanova wanted to come on the air to clarify a situation, but it just actually adds to the task that we're the best radio show on the earth simply because we just had Amir Khan on, and now what better person to talk about this Timothy Brad over Alex Campanova.
Okay. So go ahead, Alex, and tell us.
We locked on, I guess.
So what was it that you wanted to call in and let us know about, you know, that we had
well,
Tiffany on a little while ago, and he was saying something.
Yeah, it was my understanding that a writer from Fight News, I think Felipe de Leon, that's most of the Baja California news for all the fighters over there, said something about Burgos. I heard some report yesterday on Fight News saying that Burgos was going to fight an eliminator, which is absolutely true, and that he probably will be fighting on a card on September the 15th underneath Johnny Gonzalez, who is actually the fighter number two that has to face in order to be a mandatory challenger for the title for the WBC. And also that I think that Burgos was going to become a free agent in February 2011, which is 100% true. As a matter of fact, 2 days ago, I was in Mexico City dealing with a purse bid that didn't take place because we came to an agreement. We're supposedly going to fight John Gonzalez sometime in the middle of November if it all works out. We gave each other permission to fight one more fight before that. And it might be in September. We might have something for Burgos in August. But as far as Burgos having an issue with his promoter, which is Thompson Boxing Promotions, or any of his contracts, that's completely unfunded and I would say borderline stupid, not even to check with the promoter or with the manager who I spoke to this morning to make sure that everything was okay. We've had Burgos since he had about 15 fights. He started very early in his boxing life when he was about 16 years old. He's an amazing prospect, and he's doing very well. I mean, we moved him up to the ranks, and just to think that one of our prize fighters is going to be away from a contract would be just not good business for us, and I just wanted to clarify that.
Alex, this is Ernie. Real quick, what do you attribute your Thompson Boxing success? I mean, admittedly, you're a small-time promoter. You're based locally in Los Angeles with a great local show. But yet, this small-time promoter has not one, but two champions, and Juan Carlos Burgos on the verge of becoming a champion. What do you attribute your success to?
Thank you very much, Ernie. I appreciate that. I think it'll be self-serving if I try to explain, if you can attribute it to a little bit of fortune, but I think the most important thing of it all is just putting in the hours. We've been in this for 12 years. It wasn't first day success. We tumbled at the beginning. We didn't have any fighters. And then slowly but surely we started signing the right guys. We didn't go out there and sign 50 guys at one time that we couldn't provide fights for. We gave a lot of our guys activity, and like you said, we have Timothy Bradley, who's probably one of the best fighters in the world today. We have Johnny Perez, who's an incredible bantamweight, and Juan Carlos Burgos, who's going to fight. Patrick Lopez is going to be on ESPN tomorrow night, fighting against Prentice Brewer. In about a week, we have Josecito Lopez fighting against Marvin Cordova, also on ESPN. So, it's just, I think, a matter of work and long hours and a lot of effort on our part. And then, eventually it all works out.
Hey, Alex, the Yanni Perez and Joseph Arbeco rematch, I've heard rumors it's on, it's off. Is it on or is it off? I mean, is it going to happen?
It's going to happen in the early part of November. Showtime is loving the fight. They loved it the first time around. It was a great matchup, and we're definitely going to do it. We're in the process of finding a site for it, finding a home for it, but I'm sure we're going to be quick to do that. As a matter of fact, we just got an offer from Ghana to travel over there, but we got the champion. I don't think we're going to go to the Lions then.
What about in California? Is that where you're kind of eyeing the fight landing?
Yes, it should be somewhere on the West Coast, hopefully. That's what we're going for. It would be great if we can keep it home.
What about the stories of the tournament happening? Steve Kim had broke a story stating that there's going to be a 118-pound tournament. Top Rank kind of nixed the idea of having their fighters involved, which was Montiel and Donaire. But there's also the rumors that a guy you're very close to, Gary Shaw, one of his fighters as well, Vic Darchinian, is going to match himself up with Abner Morris. Is there some truth to the rumors that are going on?
Yes, there's truth to those rumors. There's something that is on the works in the 118 division. Top Rank, obviously, like any other promoter, can choose to do as they please. They obviously have a lot of talent in their roster, and they have all this television shows that can be produced on their own and be very successful with in Mexico and in the United States. But yeah, there's a the tournament is something that has been going around. Any matchup in the tournament would be a dream matchup, considering all the guys that are involved so far. And that particular fight that we just talked about, Gecko and Johnny Perez, should be part of that.
You know, let me ask you this. Is there any type of gift basket you can give Bob Arum from Top Rank to convince him to make sure that this tournament happens, Alex? I mean, is there anything we can do, at certain champagne, or maybe send him on a trip or something?
No, Bob is a Hall of Famer, and I don't think anybody knows better what to do with his fighters than Bob, so... you know, if he chooses not to be, it's a free country. He should decide to do whatever he pleases with his fighters. If he thinks that Montiel can make plenty of money outside of the other six guys or five guys that would be in the tournament, that's great. I mean, more power to him, and I don't have any problem with that. Obviously, it would be great if Montiel and Anita Vermeer participate, because that would completely round up. I think it would be such a high-caliber tournament that it would really grab the attention of the boxing crowd worldwide, but... it all depends on, you know, what type of business he can do outside of it, which I'm sure if he's pulling out or not interested in it, it must be great.
Yeah, well, we'll talk off the air, brother. Alex, hey, thank you very much, brother, for coming on Leaving the Ring and telling us, giving us the insight of what was really happening in your take and stuff. Really appreciate it. Can't wait to have you on again, Alex.
Thank you for having me on, guys.
All right, brother. Take it easy. You know, we got a couple of fight fans that they've been on hold and stuff, and I know I got Sarah still on hold. And we still got another guest that's coming through, Maurice Harris, you know, heavyweight. But before we call in Maurice Harris, let's patch in some fight fans that have been on hold for a minute. Let's go with Kerry Brooks. Let me get Kerry Brooks. Kerry Brooks, you're on the line. You want to talk about the six-man tournament?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, man, I, my opinion, man, I hope Donaire, I hope everybody signs, man. That would be, you know, I'm a boxer myself, man, 119-pounder, too. Amateur, man. But I'm a huge boxing fan, and I would love to see everybody sign and get that on, man, because I think that's overdue.
You know, the sucky thing about it, and I'll let you right now, Ernie, is that about it is that in a perfect world, there would be no, you know, hurdles to jump. But boxing's not a perfect world, you know, and everybody that's involved, we want to get them in, you know what I mean? It'd be great. I'd love to see all those guys, Dornier, you know, Montel, get them all in. It would be fantastic, man. And it would only, honestly, make up for the shitty pay-per-view cards that we've been given for this past couple, this past year. You know what I'm saying, Ernie?
Oh, absolutely, and I know for a fact that Donaire really wants it. I think his manager, Cameron Duncan, has been on board with wanting the tournament as well. It's just, you know, for some reason or another, Top Rank is blocking at the tournament simply because they feel, you know, like kind of like what Alex said, that outside of the tournament they can make more money on it. You know, and I can understand that for a guy like Montiel, whose star status is on the rise, especially in Mexico. And he's vastly becoming a main attraction in Mexico. Maybe him playing the role of Butte, you know, for the middleweight tournament. But for Donaire, I think a guy like Donaire really needs a tournament like this, simply because it creates more of a brand name for him. You know, he's tied with something that's, you know, considered a really positive, rather than being in on Pinoy Powers and fighting guys who are really less than him as far as skill-wise are concerned.
Yeah.
Did we lose Gabe?
No, Gabe is there and stuff. Gabe's arguing with people in the chat room. You know how Gabe gets with his Twitter and stuff? He starts, going at it.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Kerry, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold because I still got some other people that have been waiting for a minute. Let's patch in Steve, who wants to talk about Antonio Margarito and Manny Pacquiao. Go ahead, brother. You're live right now.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Antonio Margarito. Being that the way he beat Cotto and was able to take all his shots and walk him down.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of his chances with Pacquiao? Because I really think he has a decent chance, you know? Because I know he's going to come in shape. I know, you know, he's going to take this fight very seriously. And I think he's going to apply the same game plan in which he fought Cotto. I think he's going to apply the same game plan. And I don't know, for some reason, I just have a feeling that he has a really good chance, of getting a victory against Pacquiao. I know he's a straightforward guy and everything, but his head didn't have any plaster that night against Cotto, and that says a lot. You know what I mean? Though his last performance was shitty, but that was just a regular comeback fight, and I know he's going to take this one seriously.
Go ahead, Ernie.
Well, there's a couple things. One, I think with the Cotto fight, I think we may have seen Tony at his pinnacle. You know, I think he was primed to do something really special that night, and he did. You know, while the question of whether or not his hands were tarnished or not is out there. You know, and he's, you know, you got to kind of go by the old adage, same reasoning that people say, well, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty with this. So, you know, I tend to still look at it as a masterful performance. However, I don't know if what he left in that ring that night, and I don't know what Mosley took out of him in January of last year, might have really just dinged him to the point where we're going to see a shell of an Antonio Margarito against Pacquiao. We're going to find out, because Manny's going to be Manny, and that means a lot of punches. That means a lot of in and out. But if there was a person whose style I would have said, given the elite boxers such like Manny and Mayweather trouble, it would have been Tony. Tony can take a punch. Tony throws tons of punches. Tony may not be the best in terms of footwork, but he's going to be in front of you all the time. And ask Joshua Claudi, ask Paul Williams, even in a losing effort, just how hard it is to shake a guy like Tony off of you. And they'll all say it was impossible. Every sparring partner that I ever got for the team say the same thing. Just when I think I can rest, he's out there punching more. He's swarming on me. He's doing this. Manny's going to be tested. I do think Manny will be tested. Just how much Tony has left in the bank, it remains to be seen. I will say this too. One more thing. He's been in shape. His co-manager Sergio Diaz has told me that he's kept in shape. He's kept really active. He's been in the gym, kind of shaking out, not necessarily doing anything boxing related, but just kind of keeping shape. So that way, when the time comes where he's coming up to camp in the Oxnard, he'll be 100% ready.
Do you think he would be still be effective at 154? Because that's what it's at, right? It's at catch weight, 154?
Go ahead.
I thought it was 150.
That's a catch weight of 150.
I believe it's at 150 or 151 is what I've been told.
According to Steve Kim, he's still hearing 150.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Give or take a pound for pound. But if I could jump in on the match.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, when they brought Margarito back at 154, I got the sense, and Ernie might be able to clarify this, but they weren't necessarily moving him to 154. That they were basically, you know, the guy had been off over a year. That was a comfortable weight to make. And they were going to slowly move him down. So in a sense, with Manny having to move up, I think the weight actually plays in Margarito's favor. A lot of people are really critical of the catch weight. I'm critical of it only in that they're fighting for a title. You know, anymore, the titles are pretty much irrelevant. They've made themselves that way. So I think if Tony is fresh and he puts together the right team, I think he's a very live dog in this fight. I think the speed will...
Well, you're 100% right, Gabe.
You know, but
100% right.
I think it really plays into them. It's the right fight at the right time.
Yeah. Right. It was a fight at 54 to give Tony a chance to get some rounds in. And people say he looked bad in that fight. Well, there's two sides to this. From what I was told by his co-manager, when Tony knocked down
Garcia. And he knocked him down pretty hard. I mean, he lost his legs on it. Everybody in Tony's corner said, no, 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 no. Tony looked back and went, kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, okay, I'll keep going. You know, so I think the intent for the Garcia fight was to go around, was to work on things that Grandpa Garcia had shown him, and right. Not necessarily be the Tony that we've seen against Cotto and stuff like that. If anybody had seen the fight, you'll notice that he had more upper torso movement. He was jabbing a lot more. And those are two things that they really wanted to focus on as far as his camp is concerned. And I think that's what they went in as a game plan. I think they felt that Garcia was safe enough as an opponent to where they didn't have to really have to go to war with this guy. And it proved out. I mean, he won fairly easily. He could have probably had him out in the first round if he really wanted to. You know, I think their intents were to try to go back to 147 if the matchups were there. And it just so happened that Manny Pacquiao landed in his lap when, you know, Fighter Y decided not to fight anymore.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see Manny Pacquiao, he's going to have to fight backwards for, I don't know how long, maybe a few rounds or maybe the whole fight, but we're going to see how many Pacquiao can fight backwards.
I don't know if he's going to fight backwards, and you know, I mean, when I mean, I, look, if you look at everybody that's pressured Manny, you know,
right.
Everybody that's moved forward, Manny is really honestly, you got to give him his due on being able to have angles. You know, he's not your traditional 1-2 classic boxer. He's awkward, you know, and a lot of some fans have compared him in style wise as what's his name? I can't even. I just lost my train of thought of who I was going to say. The kid from the UK. oh my God, Prince Nassim Hamed. My bad.
Yeah.
You know, and you can say yeah a little bit because he throws punches from angles that you really don't think he's going to have leverage on, and he does. You know, I look at this fight and I hear what you're saying, the pressure and everything, but I still go back in. You know, Garcia was not the biggest puncher, and like Ernie said, he was there for rounds. He was there, you know, they knew that this guy was going to be there just for Margarito to get back into the scene. The timing, you know, to get that workmanship that he needs to bring back in because of the layoff and stuff. But the question of his jaw, is it damaged? Has it been damaged? And you're right, he took hellacious shots from Cotto. But did Cotto, just like Margarito took the fight out of him, we've seen this time and time before where when two guys get in the ring and they mix it up, there's a little bit of them left on that particular fight. And I'm still questioning Margarito's jaw. Has it been chipped enough where it can be damaged? I mean, is Manny fighting the Margarito of what we've saw in the past, not of what we saw in Garcia? And I'm not really sure about that yet, you know? And, Steve, hey, I appreciate you calling in, brother. I got to keep moving because we got other people. Hey, man. Hey, always call in. No problem, brother. It's, you know, the show for the fans.
Yeah.
Call in and chop it up with us.
Great question. Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
And, you know, we appreciate it. Everybody wants to call in, talk boxing, and it really didn't even have to be in reference to what we're talking about at the moment. It doesn't matter. We want to talk about it. 347-215-7598. You can always call in and chop it up with us and stuff. And to answer Gabriel's question, no. They haven't got a hold of him and stuff. I sent it out to our PR to call and find out. We can get him on, and they haven't been able to get a hold of him. So they'll keep trying. So don't worry, Gabe. We will get him on, brother.
I'm telling people that we're going to have him on, and then, you know what I mean? You know, you give out your...
Can we get him on right now?
Yeah, I think so.
Get him. We've said we're the show no matter what. Whether you're big time or small time, we're going to get you on. Let's
absolutely
get him on.
Yeah, you
let's
know what? Let me text Alex and let her know.
I've got this iPhone 4. It should be able to do it, right?
Stop bragging about your iPhone. We get it.
We know. We get it, buddy.
Show off. My iPhone, blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
Ah, my iPhone.
Oh, look at this. If you can't get him, I'm trying to get a hold of him right now, and it's not going through. You get him, Gabriel?
All right, guys, I'm back, and I'm here with Maurice Harris, who just finished his weigh-in.
Okay, that's why we couldn't get him in the beginning. What's up, Maurice? How you doing, brother?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right, man. You're blessed, man. That's all.
So now that you finished off the weigh-in, it's time to eat, or what's the agenda?
We about to eat, man. We about to eat now, put some protein in me, probably eat a steak or something. You know, just kick back and relax, man. Get ready for the showdown tomorrow.
What'd you weigh in at?
I weighed in at 234.
Oh, wow. So, for those of you guys don't know, Maurice is a top contender coming in, through the 90s, had some setbacks, but has been on a winning streak and is now about to fight this weekend against Nagy Aguilera, the guy that beat Oleg Moskiev, knocked him out in one round for the vacant USBA heavyweight title, to garner the winner a ranking. Now, Mo, you took a step away from the sport after 2007, but then you returned this year, and you've been on a three-fight winning streak. You're about to make it four, hopefully, for yourself. Can you talk a little bit about why you were gone and what brought you back?
Well, basically, it was just I had some contract issues with Don King at the time. And, he put me on the shelf after I fought Frederick Kendall because Frederick Kendall beat me back in 03 during the time that Roy Jones fought Ruiz on that card, and I was just off for, like, almost 3 years. And then, just couldn't find nobody, to sign me or get with someone to get me some fights. So, I was just lingering. But I always stayed in the gym, always stayed training, always kept my faith. And here I am. I'm back.
Now, what was the biggest change for you? I mean, you came in, you were pretty heavy. You were 254 for the last fight. Then you dropped down to 240. Then 235 against Robert Hawkins. Now you're 234. What has been the big change there? Is it just activity, or are you doing something different?
No, just activity, really. Just fighting myself back in shape because I was off for so long. So I fought my way back in shape. All the training couldn't do it. It was just fighting and then, changing my diet, eating right, getting a proper rest and just, putting the right things in my body. So that's what made me, start losing the weight. And, I feel better. I feel light. I'm stronger. Being at this weight, man, it feels good, man, because being at 254, man, I felt like a fat slob, man. Now I'm down. I feel good. I'm back. I'm almost to my normal weight. Like 230 is where between 230 and 235. So I'm right where I want to be.
Are you a guy that watches a lot of tape of opponents? Do you know much about Nagy Aguilera? And what if you do, break him down for us.
Well, I don't really know too much about him. I'm more like, me and Floyd are good friends. So me and him do, basically like the same thing. Like, I don't watch fights or fighters. I just, because, what you see on tape is not, what you're probably going to see, what you're going to see in the ring. So, they probably show up different, but I just like to make the adjustments when I'm in there. Like from round one, from start to finish, I'll make the adjustments. And I'm pretty good at picking up because I've been doing it for so long. So I'm pretty good at picking up on mistakes and little things that I see.
Hey, Maurice, you did say right now that you and Pretty Boy Floyd are good friends?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's like my brother, man. He's a good friend of mine, man. I haven't seen him in a while, but, real close. It's like my, one of my, closest friends.
Let me ask you really quick, being a close friend and stuff, what's the real deal? What's going on with him? I mean, is he going to want to fight, Manny? We call Manny Fighter Y. We call Floyd Fighter X.
Well, I don't really want to touch on that because that's not really none of my business. I mean, due to, the respect that Floyd is my friend. And I really don't know, what he's going to do and what's going on with him as far as that aspect. But, as far as me and him being friends, we are friends. And, that's, something that I'd rather keep under the table.
I can respect that, brother. I respect that and stuff, So let me ask you this. The money, Floyd, that a lot of us see on HBO 24/7 with the money thrown on the face, is that something that is that how he really is? A lot of fight people believe that he is. I say it's not. I say it's more of a persona. What is it, brother? Is he?
I don't really want to touch on that, man, because that's like I told you before, that's my friend, and I don't want to offend nobody. But I mean, what you see is what you get with Floyd, man. I mean, you know, Floyd is
right.
Floyd, and, you know, that's just how it is, man. Like, you know, that's just it. You know,
now, when Nagy...
I can't really get into that.
That's all good, brother. I, you know, like I said, I can respect that, man. That's all good and stuff, you know. That's what you call a true friend, you know what I mean? It stands his ground and says, you know. But I got to pick, you know what I mean? I just got to – I had to chisel at it just a little bit and see if I can get, you know, throw some curveballs. But obviously you play baseball too and stuff because you were catching everyone I was throwing. I was pitching and stuff, man. Going real quick, man, about your fight coming up, you know, because – that was a fight, really, honestly, his last fight. We got the KO. It was one of those type of things that, you know, not a lot of people knew about Nagy, but and he came out and he did his job. Is that a pro and con, in your opinion, as a fighter? Is that a pro and con for Nagy where he went out there, and I can't remember exactly how many seconds or if it was even a minute where he got his man out of there. To you, does that benefit yourself, you know, because he hasn't got the rounds in? You know, and he's still on that ultra
high.
Yeah, that too.
I mean, you know, I mean, every fighter is different. You know what I mean? Then you got to look at the level of opposition that he fought. You know, I mean, he fought somebody that was, you know, he was supposed to do that. Let's put it like that. You know, he was supposed to do that. Just like when he fought Maskayev, he was supposed to do that. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I look at him like, you know, yeah, he did his job, but that's not me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a totally different fighter. I done been through everything there is to go through in fighting. I got so much experience, man. It's just, it's unreal. You know, I've been in the ring with the best. I've been in it with Tyson, Lennox. So, I mean, it's like a teacher, you know, and a student. Like, if you want to compare styles and experience as far as
right.
Maggie, he's young. You know what I mean? He's a young guy and he's hungry, I'm sure. But, you know, I'm just older and I'm better.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I was his age at one time. So I understand, you know, you're young or whatever, but you're just not on my level.
What's the difference between the Mo Harris that came up and lost some big fights, won some good ones, and the 2010 Mo Harris?
Well, the difference is now is just, you know, with age comes experience, you know, wisdom. You know, you become a little wiser and, you know, you look at things different. You see things different. There's more kids in my life now, of course. You know, and it's like, you know, I see the way the division is. It's wide open. And somebody, you know, America's starving for a star. So I've always had the potential, and I've always showed signs of greatness. But, you know, at times, you know, outside distractions, like, you know, deter me away from the ring and you know, capture my focus somewhat. But now, today, it's like it's a little different because, you know, it's, like I said, there's more kids in my life. You know, of mine, of my own, and, you know, and it's like, it's different. You know, I'm a little bit more mature, I'm a little bit more together mentally, so, you know, that's the difference between the Mo Harris of old and the Mo Harris of now.
You also have a new team behind you, right?
Oh, say that again?
You also have a new team behind you in terms of promotion and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Boxing
360, man, Boxing 360, yeah, they, you know, moving me pretty well, man. This man believed in me, took a chance in me, and he, you know, and it's like, that's all I ever prayed for was just to get another opportunity to be able to come back and show what I'm really made of, you know, and there it is. You know, this man, you know, he believed in me, and everybody he's put in front of me on my comeback, I've beaten, you know, all the way on up to big 7'1" Julius Long. It was one of my hardest fights ever, besides Derek Jefferson, you know. You know, they say he was a bum, but he showed up to fight me that night. He was trying to kill me. He got 7 feet
right.
One, man, 280 pounds.
Jesus.
You know, so that's who, you know, that showed right there, like the toughness mentally where I'm at and where I stand in this game. So, you know, I'm great now, man. I feel good.
So we're talking with, if you're just tuning in, with Maurice Harris, heavyweight contender. He's fighting at the Grand Casino in Hinckley, Minnesota, against Nagy Aguilera. This is on August 6th. And thank you so much, Maurice, for being on the show. We wish you luck. And I hope that, you know, Boxing 360 has done for you what it did for David Estrada and, you know, and resurrected you and brought you back to where you feel you need to be.
Thank you very much, man. Thank you for having me.
And Mo, and if you're successful in knocking out Nagy, just be sure to shout it out. I left it in the ring.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Thank you, man. Thank you, brother.
All right, thank y'all, man. Bless y'all. God bless y'all, man.
All right, man.
You too, champ. Take care.
360 boxing promotions is who's he's with, right, Gabriel?
Boxing 360. They're a new
boxing
group.
Right.
Yeah, out of New York. They're run by a man named Dr. Mario Yagobi. It's a very interesting guy. His father was a Olympic athlete. He's been an athlete his whole life. Went to med school. Decided, you know what, this isn't for me after graduating, and decided to become a boxing promoter. And his whole mission statement is basically putting his fighters in, not selling them off, but putting them in fights that he thinks they can win, and kind of taking guys like Mo Harris, like David Estrada, and trying to rebuild them and have like a final run with them and get them to where, fighting at an optimum level. It's an interesting approach. He calls it giving them the pinch of love, that extra pinch of love that other promoters.
He's giving it the 360. He's giving it the 360 of the fighters that he's picking up, which is great and stuff. And love to get on and maybe chop it up a little bit about his plans in boxing and stuff, and about the promotional group and his fighters. It'd be fantastic. I know a lot of people. Yeah, definitely. I know a lot of people are waiting and wanting to hear the Freddie Roach interview. So let me kind of ride you into it, because I text both my co-hosts. Is this how it went down, guys? Because, Freddie is getting bigger. He's got a new PR, so we had to go through the ropes of getting him.
Time. When your trainer has PR, come on. Come on.
It's Freddie Roach, dude. Didn't you know that? I mean, don't get the Manny Pacquiao fans started.
Roach.
Do not get the Manny Pacquiao.
What do you mean he's getting bigger? Is he taking those shakes from Alex Ariza too?
Oh, terrible.
Play the tape.
No wonder why they had us have guidelines, interview.
What were the guidelines?
No, there was no guidelines. I was making a joke. No. There was no guidelines. Freddie's pretty open, and he was open on discussion of what we were talking about. The only thing that was, kind of messed up, it was not live, it could have been for whatever reason it was. It wasn't live. But just to let the fight fans know that my two co-hosts, they pushed out. They didn't want to be on with me. Text them, no answer from Ernie.
I didn't get any text from
Ernie. Oh, quit it. You got the other ones, but you didn't get that one.
Why would I bypass talking to a trainer who now has a PR team? Come on.
I was kidnapped by midgets. That's my story.
And Gabriel, I reminded Gabriel at night.
Wait a minute. German kidnapped you?
Yes. I know. Throw me under the bus some more, Dave.
The bus has not completely ran you over yet. There's still the back wheels that are going to go right over you and stuff. And Ernie, check this out. So I call up Gabriel the night.
Unbelievable.
Right, okay. I said, hey, are you coming on? He said, oh, yeah, man, I'm going to put my alarm clock on. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Came to the hour, right? I'm up at 7 in the morning, and I'm texting him. I'm calling him. I text you. I figured if anybody was going to text me back, it was you, because you're up early in the morning. Nothing. And I was like, man, these guys, are you serious? The other thing, too, is I don't know if anybody else is like this, but if you have too much coffee, your mind is just going too fast, and it's not catching up with the words coming out of your mouth. So I was afraid of that happening. I said, okay, I'm only going to have one cup, but it didn't wake me up. So during the interview, I could, after listening, I was able to listen back to it. Obviously I had to listen back to it and stuff, and then put so I could post it on air. I was kind of disappointed in myself. I don't feel like I was able to get all the questions I wanted out with them, and it was really, honestly, it wasn't Freddie's fault. So, fight fans, you can hit me up on the email and leave it in the ring and cuss me out and do whatever.
Freddie.
But the good part about it is that we can always get him back on if you guys were unsatisfied with it.
If his PR team allows it.
Well, I think they're going to allow it. I think they like me. I know they don't like Gabriel, but they definitely like me.
They don't? Oh, do tell.
They love me. I've actually been criticized for having...
This is what they said, Ernie. They said, Gabriel, from Max... I said, yeah. And they said, the skinny kid that hits the bag and goes, every time he hits it,
oh, wow. Wow. Damn.
I know. You can hit me
Play
out.
The tape.
I know. They knew.
Gabriel. Come by the Fortune Gym on a Saturday. we'll see who faints first.
I'll bring Omar with me.
Nah.
I have no idea who you're talking about. I don't even know what that is. What's
so,
Omar?
Speaking of Omar,
he was
in Vegas over the weekend, and apparently the people are not too happy. You know, the people that are involved with his career, namely his promoter, not too happy with him. Really, really bad.
Really?
Yeah.
You want to do the little timeline. You don't sit next to a rival promoter on their pay-per-view and wave at the cameras. You don't put up pictures of Leonard Ellerbe and say this is your new advisor when you work for Top Rank and the guy works for a rival promoter.
Mm-hmm.
You don't say I'm taking private meetings with Floyd Mayweather. What you also don't do is not answer the calls of your managers or call one and beg for money while you're partying in Vegas. All those things for a 10-0 fighter who's never won a fight that he wasn't supposed to, what can you say? The head got too big. You notice he's a lot quieter on Twitter since they called him out the other day. Was I lying? I don't think I was.
No.
I wasn't.
Wow.
All
it's like the uncle putting the it's like the uncle putting the nephew over the lap to give him a spanking.
In full disclosure, I've been covering this or dealing with this for about whenever the Angulo fight was, and Ernie and I were there. Since then, I kind of knew something was up. I actually spoke direct message back and forth with Omar, said, man, you really should, you really need to pull back, man. I'm hearing terrible things from your camp, all sides. You really need to pull back. He pretty much laughed in my face, called me a hater, said I was wrong. Well, am I wrong, Omar? You tell me.
Yeah.
Oh, and I know he's listening, or his minions are.
Yeah.
Ooh, Omar, can't be hitting on you again. Ooh. Basically, that's what I can hear right now being told to Omar. And you know what? I will verify. This time, I kind of sat back and wished Omar nothing but the best, but I can verify everything that Gabe said is indeed true. I talked to his manager / part, trainer, and they all pretty much are like, this kid lost it.
Yeah, and they've called us too,
When Top Rank heard about the Ellerbe thing, that was the last straw. And while I don't think he's done anything official at this point, from what I understand, they did release him.
Wow.
Based on all that. Yeah, so, I mean, how to kill your career in several easy steps,
Yeah.
And what are those steps again there, Gabriel? What was it, 3 steps?
Get a Twitter or tweet idiocy on a Twitter account. I forget exactly how I did it. It was pretty cool. Get a Twitter account, tweet idiocy, and be Omar Henry.
Terrible, man.
Well,
yeah.
And a lot of people say, why are you hating and one, I'm a 37-year-old grown-ass man. I don't hate on people. I gave Omar a fair warning, went back and forth. And really, for me, with the straw that broke the camel's back was when I heard from Ryan Bates, a boxing writer, that gave the first coverage to Omar, that he saw him in Vegas. This is a guy that actually helped Omar through English class, doing his homework. This is a guy from way back. You stay with who you came to the party with. Omar sees him in Vegas. The guy says, "Hey, Omar, what's up?" Omar looks at him, calls him a hater, and turns his back and walks away. To me, represent yourself however you want to, but when you start hurting people that brought you to the dance, I'm sorry, but that's just behavior that just cannot be, cannot be let go. That's how I looked at it. So, what happened, and for me, I hope we never mention him again on the show.
I'm done talking about him.
Let's go ahead and continue on because we do got Freddie. And it is going to be mentioned, though, again. It's going to be mentioned again because a lot of fight fans hit me up on the emails and they would say, "Hey, man, ask him about, Freddie Roach. What happened when he went down to the wild card? Because now he's with Roger Mayweather. What happened?" So I did.
Oh, Gabe. Oh, did Michael Campbell email you
I, you know what? I got it. Hold on.
Because Mike emailed me too about a particular thing. So go ahead and
about what happened as far as why it went from Freddie to Roger.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
so
not looking good for the kid.
I asked Freddie, and Freddie gave his answer, and you know what? Without further ado, man. I mean, let's play the tape. Okay.
Play the tape.
God damn it. No, they're not going to go into the Super 6. Stop bugging me about it.
You're listening to Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, Freddie, how you doing, brother?
How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. The Antonio Margarito fight, is that a fight that you think that was really needed with you guys, or was this a fight just to keep you guys occupied for the time being?
There's not much else out there, you know, so, without Mayweather coming to the table, I think our choice is limited, and, you know, who's out there, you know, Marquez, we've been done twice already, controversial decisions, and maybe a good fight again, but maybe too small at 147, so, Cotto, like, unimpressive in his last fight against a crippled guy, a broke guy with one knee. And who wants to see the rematch? And where else do we have to go? To be honest, we don't have a lot of options. Cotto and those guys are making noise, but nobody really wants. They don't really want to fight. Timothy Bradley,
we'll
fight him tomorrow.
Well, speaking of Timothy Bradley, and you, right now you just mentioned you guys would fight him tomorrow, but it didn't look like Top Rank was a bit interested in that fight. Bob Arum saying that, who is Timothy Bradley? But would you guys have been more satisfied getting Timothy Bradley over Antonio Margarito?
Sure, Timothy Bradley kind of exposed himself in the last fight. That wasn't too good a fight. He fought a very ordinary guy and looked very ordinary beating him. Does it sell any tickets? No. Does Margarita sell more tickets? Yes. You know, he has a much bigger Spanish following. And it's a much more popular fight. And it's a much more exciting fight, too.
You know, Antonio Margarito being inactive for, you know, the year because of his suspension, and in his last fight with Garcia, it looked like his, I don't know, it just didn't look like the Antonio Margarito of the past. And I was kind of mirroring, saying that if Manny got in there with them, I kind of see the same outcome of what Manny Pacquiao did to Oscar De La Hoya. You know, it just was one-sided. What's your thoughts about that?
Well, the thing is, you know, he was off for a year, and nobody's going to look really sharp in the first fight back. So he's got that one under his belt. I mean, you know, I'm sure he'll look better in the next one because he has that ten rounds under his belt at least. And, you know, again, nobody's going to, after a year layoff, nobody's going to expect to look great. But, you know, he gets to see red again, and, you know, he did what he had to do. He won that fight pretty soundly. And, yeah, I'm sure he's going to get up for Manny Pacquiao. And the key thing is, yeah, I mean, everything bad that has happened to him lately, if he beats a guy like Pacquiao, it changes his life.
How do you guys get up for a fight with Margarito? I mean, you guys were anticipating the Floyd Mayweather.
We get up for anybody they put in front of us because we don't take anyone lightly. So we didn't train the same for Margarito as we would for Mayweather or any other opponent in the world. We don't take people lightly. We don't go in to fight thinking this is an easy fight because there's no such thing.
Amir Khan, you know, looked sensational against Paulie Malignaggi. And,
Emmanuel Khan crushed Paulie Malignaggi and looked great against Paulie. He's the first guy to devastate Paulie in my life. Don't tell me he just looked okay.
No, I said he looked sensational.
That's the wrong statement. He looked great in that fight.
No, I said he looked sensational against Paulie Malignaggi. You know?
I agree.
And since he looked so sensational against Paulie Malignaggi, do you think that it kind of scared off any potential opponents? I mean, Marquez is not, it's not even coming out of his mouth. He said he doesn't have any interest in fighting him.
Yeah, Marquez, you know, he has a chance to be the first Mexican fighter to win, I think, four world titles. We're giving him that, we offered him that opportunity. He turned it down last time. Is he going to turn it down again? I'm not sure, but there's a lot of good advice out there for Amir right now. Yeah, Bradley's talking about fighting Pacquiao, but he better worry about Amir first.
140, he looks good. He looks thick. He looks strong. How long can you keep him at 140? I mean, when does he move up?
No time soon. We want to clean the 40-pound division up first. We make 140 easily. We could still make 135 if we wanted to, but I think he's more resilient and better at 140. So the 40-pound division stack right now, we're just going to get these guys to come to the table and fight us. I mean, Devin Alexander, making a lot of noise. Fighting Kotelnik pretty soon. He looks like he should win that fight. Kotelnik's not beat Madonna. He's not a bad boxer. But again, Amir has a bright future. And the thing is, he's way better than all those guys out there. He has way more amateur experience and stuff like this. And they tell me how much better these guys are. But how come they didn't go to the Olympics and they didn't win a medal? I mean, I fear nobody at that division. Whoever Richie Schaefer offers me, I'll take.
The big thing with Amir in the beginning when he went into your training camp was a lot of people were saying, hey, how do you correct something that is rarely ever corrected, which is the chin?
Well, it wasn't the chin that got him knocked out. His aggressiveness and he made a fundamental mistake. And he opened himself up going with a wide, long hook and opened his chin up to it, and he walked right into a perfect punch. Does he have a bad chin because he's been knocked out once in his life? I don't think so, but the thing is, I know a lot of people do, but he's a lot more solid than people give him credit for, and I don't see any problem with that. I mean, he hasn't lost a round since he got knocked out in that fight with Chris Scott, and I think it was probably the best thing in the world that ever happened to him because he realized the mistake he made, and he won't make that mistake again.
Freddie, I got my last question for you, and you've always straight up every time I've spoken to you, off camera, on camera, on the radio, off the radio. Are you happy with boxing anymore? Does boxing still give you that certain light? Ever since the fame and everything has came along with it, is it what you thought it was going to be?
It's a lot of fun. I'm just famous enough to enjoy it a little bit. I'm recognized by people by 24/7 and so forth. But it's nice to be recognized for what you do. I'm dealing with it, but I still work 12 hours a day in the gym, so. It hasn't changed my life at all. I can sleep. I don't have to worry about paying bills and stuff like that at this point. But it makes it a little easier. But I'm not that type of person that's gonna be flashy, too flashy at least.
But in terms of criticism that comes from all corners. How does someone balance that out? I mean, you work so hard to get to this point, and it seems like since you've gotten to this point, there's been nothing but criticism. Nobody seems to focus on the positive. It's just the negatives that keep coming out.
Well, it's in our nature, I guess, to be jealous of success. But I can't let that bother me and so forth. But the thing is, my job is to keep winning and and just prove everyone wrong. Because I still have a passion for this. I still work really hard, and I know how to study fights. I know how to come up with game plans, and it's just I spend 12 hours a day, 6 days a week in the gym because I love the gym. I mean, it's like if I didn't have the gym, I don't know what the fuck I'd be doing. I have no hobbies, and I went to the Expendables last time. Mickey Rourke invited me to the premiere, though, so that was fun.
Right.
So once in a while, I get to go to the movies, but that's about my only other form of entertainment besides boxing.
Omar Henry, the prospect for Top Rank, went down to your gym. Was there any talk of him being trained by you?
I think he stopped by to check it out a little bit. He worked out one day, and he's a funny kid. He talks a lot. He's He's a little bit in love with himself, but that's okay. I mean, I like cocky fighters because if they didn't believe in themselves, who would, you know, no one else is. So, I mean, I think you need that edge to be a good fighter. So, he showed some interest about moving to the West Coast and training. My Jimmy told me he's expensive here, though. I mean, so LA is not a cheap place to live. But I told him, I said, have your manager Cameron Duncan call me and, you know, we'll out.
Really quick, a prediction on the Margarito fight set. You know, what do you think? TKO, knockout, or do you think you guys are going to go all 12 rounds with him?
With Margarito, I think we'll knock him out. You know, I remember when Manny beat Oscar De La Hoya. I said, Manny, who's next? He said, Margarito. I said, he might be a little bit too big. And everyone thought that at the time, of course, but he saw something that he knows he can take advantage of in that fight. And Manny, I feel Manny will lock him out in the late round.
I think that that you and Manny are going to be doing a service for boxing fans by knocking him out because of the fact that so many fans are upset of what he tried to do against Shane Mosley.
I guess it's give and take, of course. You know, he says he was unaware of it. You know, we'll never really know the truth unless he comes out and, you know, admits to it or something like that. But the thing is, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Did he know? Didn't he know? I just say this. The person, if he used it in fights before, someone didn't do their job. Because you can't trust anybody, because people will do anything to win. So, I mean, Margarito will never get away with that with me in the other corner. But you know, again, if you use the illegal pattern in the cargo fight, which we can't prove and nothing like that, but we can assume it. It looks like the damage was done, but some in Cotto's camp didn't do their job correctly. So. And the commission didn't do the job correctly. So, I mean, thing is, stuff like that, I mean, it's unfortunate, but in the world we live in, winning is everything. And the thing is, I just see as long as a good action fight, which it looks like it will be, we'll take that fight until Mayweather comes around, if possibly. And if not, we'll see who's next.
When the fight was announced to you guys and given to you, did Manny, what was the reaction to it? Was he excited about it, or was he more or less like, okay, whatever, just put somebody in front of me?
Him and Bob worked out. You know, when Manny's in the Philippines, we don't speak because I'm here doing my job and he's doing his thing. So we're in training a month. But Manny doesn't take anyone lightly, so he'll get up for any opponent, so. He did express to me that he wanted to fight Margarito one time, so I'm sure the passion's there.
Hey, Freddie, brother, thank you again, man, for taking the time to speak to me. It's always fun. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, Freddie, take it easy.
Well, there you go. You know, and like I said, I don't know. I wasn't too happy with the interview. Ernie, you there? Gabe, you there?
That's basically it. I mean, I don't know, dude. Honestly. Gabe can attest to this. The Freddie Roach from, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, vastly different than the Freddie Roach now. I remember doing chats with the guy way back when Manny was still that crazy, you know, guy beating up guys that we didn't expect him to. And it was a refreshing thing to see a guy as grateful as Freddie was. Truly thankful to the training that he had received, truly thankful to have his first world champion in Virgil Hill, going through the motion, trying to help out every fighter he could, you know, whether it be Craig McEwen or Manny Pacquiao. Now it sounds like the guy is a little changed. And you know what? You know, fame will do that to everybody. But, you know, just when you said it yourself, when you had to go through a PR person to get to Freddie, dude, seriously, I mean, you and I and Gabe will all know. When you talk to Freddie, first thing he would ever do is give you the office number and give you his cell phone.
Right.
And you could always talk to him. You could always call him. I used to talk to Freddie personally. Hey, Freddie, can you do a chat with us on Thursday? Yeah, sure, buddy. Just give me a call. I'll be at the gym. You can call me at the gym or you can call me on my cell phone. Right. And I'd call him. And if he didn't answer, he'd call me right back. Now it just seems you know.
But you got to go out and look at the you know, the motions of what has changed for him. I mean, you're absolutely right. 5 years ago, I even think lesser than that, you know, he was more accessible to get a hold of. But I think now there are so many people now trying to get a hold of him. They have to kind of, you know, thin him out a little bit. You know what I mean? Where he's being tugged from everybody. So I can understand the whole PR thing. It's just not us trying to get an interview. There's tons of guys in the line that are trying to get a hold of him. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I have a theory
go ahead, Gabe.
I have a theory about why the change happened. And actually, I did know Freddie 5 years ago. I met him, trying to think of the first camp, about 3 years ago when I moved to L.A. Probably like 6 months in, I met him. The hype train was already kind of rolling. But you're right. I mean, here's the thing with Freddie. I did an interview with him several weeks back. And at the time, you know, I trained there for like a year and a half and was kind of a member of the gym. I'm not anymore. I haven't been for almost a year. And when you go up to Freddie in person, you can ask him for anything, and he'll say yes. Can I do an interview? Yes. Well, that particular day, I happened to go in the wild card. I hadn't been in a long time, and I went in with Steve. And I was looking for my Monday night feature. I do all the Tuesday night feature story for Max Boxing, which is due Monday night. I didn't have Dick. We walk up, we're watching some fighters. Freddie walks up and says, basically, Mike Collins is trying to get me fired. That's why they didn't have me for the Burnaby fight. They had Boo Boy. Starts laying this all on me, and Steve looks at me, says, "Do you want this? Because this is your Monday night feature." So I say, "Freddie, you want to go on record?" He said, "Absolutely." So we do the interview. Now, Freddie used to have a person named Marie who would run all of his PR stuff. She runs the gym.
And she still does.
Day-to-day.
She does.
She runs the day-to-day
does.
Stuff.
Uh-huh. Right.
But you have to go through her. Now, if you know Freddie, as I do and Ernie does and yourself, you could go in, and if you ran into him, he would do the interview. Well, he's getting so many requests. And they got so much heat from that interview that I did. I was railed on by Marie afterwards. She was very upset. You did clear that with me. None of that stuff was stuff you were supposed to ask about, even though it was Freddie that was the one that wanted to talk about it.
Right.
And in deference to her, I screwed up. I didn't follow protocol.
Right.
And it was my bad. And I guess there was some heat from it. And so all of a sudden now you're seeing this change, and now it's a PR person. He's going to do pre-recorded stuff, you know, and – there's no guidelines or anything, but they can control who he talks to a little bit. And I think that's wise, because he's spreading himself thin. And, you know, there's a million website guys out there always wanting to get that Freddie Roach interview, and it was just becoming too much. And so I can kind of understand it.
I understand it completely, you know, and I think we're both on that same page there where, you know, I was able to go in there, not even unannounced, and you would get that interview with him, you know. And he's still...
Yeah.
A lot like that. I mean, they have literally told us, you know, don't ask about that. And then I'll, you know, tell Freddie, hey, you know, I'm not supposed to ask about this. And he'll say, no, go ahead, ask me about it. I want to answer it. You know, I don't think Freddie's ever been the kind of guy who doesn't want to talk about something. He likes to talk. You know, that's one thing about Freddie. He likes to man up to whatever he has said in the past or what is being said around him. He'll man up to it. But the thing that I was noticing, and I don't know if you guys caught on to it, but right from the beginning, and I don't know, maybe because it was early, because it was a real early interview, and I was not even happy with the time, you know, of what it was going to be. But it's one of those things. Well, I have to take it, you know. What can I do? But right from the beginning, I kind of felt and heard a different Freddie, in my opinion. And Freddie's a great guy. I like the guy a lot, you know. I've had great conversations with him, you know, off about boxing and everything else. And but I've kind of felt like a on-the-fence Freddie right away. You know, when
I like Freddie. I dig the crap out of Freddie. But, you know, that's the thing that I've noticed, too. That's all.
Did you notice that?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
When I said about Amir Khan... And I said he was sensational. It was like he heard a completely... It was like he was just waiting for me to say something bad about his fighter. And he was like, don't say it was just okay. And I'm like, I didn't say that. I said he was sensational, you know?
You know the difference I've noticed? And I actually get this with a few people. People remember my face. They don't remember always my name.
Because you're sexy.
Thank you. I don't mean that the way it sounds.
But, you know, you show up and you interview guys, and Freddie is very different. I did one phone interview once with Freddie. It was around the time of the first negotiations between Fighter X and Fighter Y, and when they fell apart, I did a phone interview with him. And I don't think he made the connection between the guy that was in his gym and interviewing him and working out, you know. And I would see Freddie. I'd get there, like, you know, right when they opened, like 6:30, and he'd get there at 9, get his coffee, and then we'd talk. And, you know, so we know each other. But on the phone, we've never talked and until that moment. And it was a very different interview. It was a little defensive. It was a little bit on guard. Maybe it was a little bit of that. I'm not trying to, you know, be a defense attorney or anything.
And you know what? You know what's funny, Gable? I think you're right about that, because I've spoken to Freddie, and he'll be all, who is this? And then I'll tell him, and I'm not really sure if he knows, but then when I see him, he'll go like, hey, how you been? Where you been? You know what I mean? That kind of kind of gig with him and stuff. But still, like I said, to me, he was just, from the previous times I've spoken to him, it was more of a, you know, I'm prepared to defend myself type of thing because of the whole Margarito.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it might be that. I don't know whether if somebody has already kind of gave him some shit about that, where he's already, I got to defend this. I got to defend the chosen fighter we decide to pick or decide to have to face, you know, because Top Rank is feeding this guy. Or you know, about Amir Khan. And the whole fame thing comes in a big play, where it's not just one or two people coming at him and asking him questions. We have a whole barrage of people, and it could become overwhelming. You know what I mean? I mean, the guy does have Parkinson, and you know, and he does have he does run a whole complete gym, and he's got a fighter that's been accused of, you know, drug enhancements, and you know, to me personally, I just kind of heard a little bit of it, and I know some people are thinking, oh, you know, you're defending him or whatever the case is, but to me personally, I kind of heard of Freddie Roach words, where to me it was like, boxing is finally pissing me off. I'm tired of being the nice guy.
Maybe. I wonder. Well, there's a little bit of, when you've raced Freddie, I've had that in person where you kind of hit him with some hard questions, and he's not happy about it. You know, there's another, you know, he's an ex-fighter. You know, I think that's the thing that people forget. You know, maybe, you know, they didn't see him or whatever. But there's that other side in there, that when you brace him a little bit, or a lot in some cases, he's not afraid to go, you know, shut the fuck up, and I'm not answering that question, or you're full of shit, you know, and just go right at you. There's definitely that guy. The guy, the mild-mannered guy that you see, you know, is also a guy that, you know, knocks somebody out, like in Starbucks or something, like a while back. You know, it was on the 24/7 they talked about. This is a guy that, you know, he's one of the hard streets, one of the harder upbringings I've ever heard of.
Right.
So you brace him, man, and that the nice guy goes away real quick, you know. But to the interview, you know, nice job, dude, as far as, you know, handling a tough situation. I mean, Freddie snapping at you kind of sucks, you know, having to deal with it. But
I thought it was hilarious. I mean, but like I said,
did you
kinda
cry?
You know what? I did after, because I figured my co-hosts would have my back, but they didn't. One guy doesn't return my texts, and now he's over like, I didn't get your text. I didn't get your text. But if I told you, hey, let's go to
that's
the,
why you were crying?
Hey.
Why you cry?
Oh, man. But anyways, it's
you too, Ernie. You want to talk about that fight a little bit? I mean, we kind of broke it down. The one thing, you know, and somebody actually brought it up in the chat, that was a question that I didn't even really think of right off the bat, because I'll be honest, I don't read a lot of other people's stuff, and I don't pay attention to a lot of what some people think is stories and what I would consider an actual story. But this one was a great question by Diane in our chat room. She said, why is it that months ago, after when the Margarito thing was going on, he said, you know, he should be put in there for, you know, attempted murder, and now you're fighting him? That's a really good question. You know,
did he say that? I wasn't aware he even asked.
No,
what is that?
I haven't seen that quote. I remember asking him about it, and he was one of the few trainers that said, you know, it's possible he didn't know. You know,
because I talked to him.
Come in,
right, but
Margarito
you know what?
Come to the gym, you know.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say. And I had talked, I had spoken to him a while, you know, I think it was not immediately after what happened with Margarito and Cotto. You know, it was sometime, I think it was right after the Mosley. I'm not really sure. I can't remember the exact. And we talked about it, and he actually was like, you know, I don't know if he did it. I don't think he did. I'm not really sure. You know, I met him. I know him, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's not in his character. So to hear that, and I've heard, I mean, I haven't seen it, but I've heard from other fight fans from around the way say, like, oh, yeah, you know, some people are, you know, locked away. But not necessarily saying that Freddie said that. So I'm not really sure if he said that. I'd like to see the article and where he did say that. It would have been nice to have it in front of me at that time when I had him on. I would have liked to ask him about that. You know, why did you say that a month ago? And then now you're getting this fight with them in November and a change of heart.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like I said, I don't even know when that article came out. I know I've had conversations with Freddie about it. And he never said that to me. What he said was, you know, it's possible for a fighter not to know, you know. And he kind of, at first, was saying it's impossible. Then we talked about it, and then he said it's possible. It's definitely possible. When I explained to him, you know, how the knuckle pad worked and how the whole apparatus actually was made, he said, okay, that's possible. So, you know, that's my conversation with him, you know. I think people run with quotes far too much, you know. This sport, more than any other, lives on the internet. It's been kept alive by the internet and websites and web reporters. But we've talked about this before. What it's done is watered down journalism. You know, guys get one quote and they run with it as a feature, or they hear that a fight might be happening and that becomes a feature, and everybody runs on it and that becomes the latest topic. Maybe because it's a year-round sport, but it's not like a normal league sport. That's what people do is do a lot of speculation. Me personally, I'd rather check multiple sources, actually go straight to the person and run with it that way, you know.
Absolutely, you know, and I would have loved to get, you know, have asked him if he did quote that, and like I said, we're not really sure. Could have asked him, hey, did you say that? To, you know, clarify, but didn't know about it, and definitely would try again to get him on again before the fight happens and speak to him, you know, talk to him a little bit about that. And I'm gonna look for that. I'm gonna definitely look for that quote and see if we can find it. You know, a little earlier today, during the day, actually a lot earlier in the day, again in the morning, 10 in the morning, I had to get on a telepress conference for the Michael Grant and Thomas Adams fight. And I got to say, it was Grant was on there and, you know, he was a little bit, he was talking more or less about, he's back, and so, people are judging him from his previous fights where his mind was not in the game, and now he's with Mustafa, Eddie Mustafa, and, you know, Mustafa's helping him out and has got him ready to go, and they really didn't think too much about Adamic, and they're planning to, you know, use the jab and outbox him and keep the smaller heavyweight, Adamic, at bay. Some media guys were on there asking, do you think you're going to have problems with him being as mobile as he was against Chris the Nightmare? And he said, Eddie Mustafa was like, no, man, I'm going to put that up a little bit on Leaving in the Ring, you know, and everybody can listen on to it and stuff. So look for that a little later. But this is the thing I wanted to talk to you guys about, you know, and they want to put it on pay. They're going to put it on pay-per-view, okay, on your local cable stations out there. And I don't know, first off, I don't think it's worth anything to be paying for it for anybody, honestly, you know. The time where it's needed to, you know, go like, hey, you know what, I was kind of probing in a little bit, like, okay, who's on the undercard? And you got Joel Julio, who lost to, Alfredo Angulo. You know, that was his last fight. Got knocked out. What was it? The 11th round? I can't remember exactly the round and stuff, or was it 12th? Can't remember. But and then other fighters on that undercard. Okay, so you know, they I don't know whether if it was going to be juiced up enough for you to pay for it. You know, but my thing is this: is that there's a lot of media people on there that were praising it. And I didn't really understand that. I had questions. I asked my questions. But I didn't want to sit there and say this was a great fight. You know?
Hater.
Well,
Well, it isn't. I mean, this is the
it's
thing.
Not
it,
a
it
big
all
fight.
Depends, it all depends on what Michael brings to the table. I haven't had a chance to talk to him. I'm doing a one-on-one with him and Eddie tomorrow. And you know, I'll kind of know more then, and I'll hopefully be able to get out to see them train before this thing goes down. But, you know, I can totally see your point, Dave. You know, but I wrote a piece on this week, you know, called The First Step is Admitting You Have a Problem. And to me, the independent pay-per-view is a necessary animal. If we wait around, like a big problem is, like take a look at like Jermaine Taylor, a guy that was developing well, then they moved him to HBO, and he became a two-time-a-year fighter because his promoters or, you know, his managers waited around for the HBO date. And so he only fought two times a year. And when you're a young fighter, even if you get a title, you can't develop fighting two times a year. You just can't. Now, by the same token, promoters shouldn't wait around in general to move their fighters on HBO just on Showtime or versus, you know, whatever TV date that is offered to them. They become beholden to the TV dates. And that's really what happened to network boxing on ABC and Wide World of Sports and CBS and all the other free networks. When the promoters started getting the big bucks from HBO and Showtime, they did a deal with the devil. They basically took us off free TV, went for bigger money, but less TV dates. And that's been the big problem in developing these fighters, why the sport is falling out of the mainstream. So to me, it sucks that we would have to do a pay-per-view like this, but I can understand that they've got a fighter in Tomasz Adamek that they need to keep active. There aren't TV dates. There aren't major fighters that are going to fight them so that they can get on those cable networks. So they got to do something like this. And this is the beauty of the free market system. Fans, if you think this is as crappy a fight as Dave does, don't buy it. And they'll go away. You know, they'll absolutely go away.
And you know what, fans, this is the thing, too, you know, because it brings up an article that you did, Gabriel, and a conversation that was sparked up with me with a promoter I spoke to yesterday. And I'm not going to say his name because, you know, it was kind of one of those conversations.
Did you read the article?
That, you know, I recommend enough to read that article, and I did read the article and stuff. And, you know, it goes to this, you know, and we were talking about the Super Six in the middleweight and hopefully happening in the bantam or even at the 140. And he was like, oh, I'd really like to see the 140. But I kind of threw in was, you know, the whole HBO thing. And, you know, and he said, you know, man, you know, I'm a promoter. And it really sucks that things are really just out of control, you know, with the whole pay-per-views and, you know, the whole Top Rank not getting involved in certain things or you know, Golden Boy at certain times. And I said, you know, this is the bad part, okay, is you have these big promoters that rely on certain fees from casinos and they have dates already filled up with networks. HBO obviously is the biggest network, okay? And something that you just mentioned right now, if you're unhappy with a card, don't buy it, okay? And you're absolutely right, because at the end of the day, these tournaments are not happening because of one particular promoter saying, what do I need to do that for? You know, I don't need to have my fighter on, you know, on a particular network, on Showtime or whatever. I don't even have to have him on HBO if I don't have to. I can put him on pay-per-view, okay? Or I could keep him on HBO, and Golden Boy can attest to this, is that HBO picked them up as a pay-per-view buy, you know, where they could be like, well, screw the fans. You know what I'm saying? Because the fact is that I have a network paying for this card already. So whether you come and watch it or not, I already got paid.
Yeah, I mean, they have an output deal, you know, and with HBO, Golden Boy does. And to be fair, they reportedly shut down the 140 tournament because they have a lot of the players there. And the other two guys that are the top guys, you know, and Bradley and Alexander, you know, they wanted the tournament, and so did Gary Shaw, so did, you know, Thompson Boxing, you know, and so did Don King, and Golden Boy nixed it. And it's because they have that power, that relationship with, you know, between, you know, Golden Boy and HBO with that output deal. I mean, I was shocked, you know, sitting there and hearing that HBO had picked it up. And if you look at it, you got two pay-per-views that night on September 18th. You've got Top Ranks. Actually, it's not a pay-per-view. That's a Showtime free show, the Showtime Top Ranks, Rafael Marquez versus Lopez.
Lopez, right.
But look at these two cards. Staples Center, you know, Golden Boy, you know, $49.95 HBO pay-per-view. Shane Mosley versus Mora. Saul Alvarez versus Valdemir, which is actually a fight I don't have a problem with. Victor Ortiz versus Vivian Harris. Now, over on
Huge
Showtime,
problems with that fight.
Oh, yeah. Two guys named Vicious, and they're not vicious anymore.
Right. Now, over on Showtime, you've got Juan Manuel Lopez versus Marquez. Great fight. You know, kind of a pass-the-torch kind of fight, but it could be action for as long as we get to see it. Jose Benavides is on the undercard, non-televised, but you also have Henry Bruselas versus Hector Munoz, Diego Maldonado versus Carlos Oliveira, Rodrigo Garcia versus James Winchester. Those are three fights no one wants to see. I'd like to see Benavides. I think he's a great prospect. Now, if these two guys, these promoters, worked together, we could combine those cards and have something that is worth pay-per-view. But both of these guys are not working together. There's a Cold War, really not even a Cold War. It's a nuclear war at this point. They're going at each other, and they're not working together. Does that help boxing, or does that help the promoters at HBO and Showtime?
Exactly.
It doesn't help boxing. It doesn't help boxing. At all.
At all.
There's a lot of problems going on here. There's a lot of problems. And to me, the fans, you know, networks like HBO and Showtime don't care about ratings. They don't work like all the free networks.
Right,
exactly. They're subscription-based. So not watching that Showtime card isn't going to help. Probably not, you know, but not buying that pay-per-view would help. If everybody, you know, to me, what did it was that pay-per-view card last weekend, which we had talked about not being so good, which I'm curious, Ernie, if you now feel that it was a good undercard.
Yes.
If people hadn't bought that, HBO would not have bought this card. But because people bought crap that they already knew the outcomes of three of the fights and didn't know the outcome of just one fight, then HBO wouldn't be... You know, you're basically encouraging them to keep giving you crap. That's basically what's happening.
I like the card.
Really?
I like the card except for the one fight. But I mean, come on, well, liking the card and paying for a card is two different things. Right?
Let me preface it by this.
Go for it.
You also didn't have to pay for it. You were there.
But I still would have paid for it, Gabe.
Really?
Yes, Gabe. Yes. We're not all single pants. We're not all eunuchs who buy everything. I don't agree with all your points. I don't think we're sold. Let me finish, Gabe, before you jump in.
I'm not,
he's already jumping. I mean, I can hear him.
It's just a verbal affirmation.
Let me preface it. No, I don't think this was the greatest card in the world. I think one of the best cards I've ever seen was, I think it was the first Manny Pacquiao Morales fight where they also had Arce Hussein and I want to believe Castillo Morel. That was probably top to bottom the best cards I've seen. But in order for them, here's the way I think, in order for them to get to a point where we see those types of cards, where we get interesting matchmaking, and you may see this as a foregone conclusion, but there were plenty of people picking Rocky Wars to beat Linares simply because of what happened with Sagato.
Yeah,
there were people who were picking Casa Mayor to beat Ghost because Ghost is semi-one-dimensional and Casa has more facets. Those were interesting. Now, and of course, the Jacob Pirog fight. So there was an interest level. And I think, in my opinion, that if you show a little bit of interest in the fact that they're going in the right direction and trying to put on more interesting and creative matchups for their pay-per-views, then I think it's a positive direction. I think it's a complete 180 from what we saw on May 1st and what we saw, what date was that, March 13th. I think what they did was they put their two biggest stars on and a lot of crap. I think what we saw this past weekend was, okay, we have to pay these fighters X amount of dollars. We cannot put them on HBO simply because they make too much. We're going to try to make this competitive to try to make, you know, this a sellable pay-per-view.
You're right.
It's hit or miss. It was hit or miss.
Right, and you're absolutely right. But I'll go back to... Listen, hold on.
I'm sorry.
Okay, this is my thing. Is the question was, were the fights interesting to watch? Yes. Absolutely.
Absolutely, 100%.
But the price of whatever it was, $59 something, almost close to $60, that's something that could still be questionable. Now, you're absolutely – they got to make the ends to pay these fighters.
Yes.
But I'm pretty sure they could have made the ends if they could have maybe shaved off the cost. I think more
fans
could have been more happier with
that. In that aspect, yes, I do agree with you that I don't think every boxing pay-per-view needs to be at the price point of $59.95 because most of us now have HD. $59.99 is the price that you're going to pay for a pay-per-view in HD.
Right.
I do not believe that all pay-per-views from major promoters like Top Rank and Golden Boy, I almost said HBO, well, they're their own promoter, but that's a whole different story. I do believe that they should really set the market as an aggressive thing. Case in point, as aggressive as they set the price point for the Mora Mosley ticket, they should also in turn do the same for their pay-per-view. Now, there is an added incentive, and I'm doing a plug for Golden Boy. Hopefully Monica is hearing this. You do get a $20 rebate whenever you buy Golden Boy pay-per-view. If you buy
you guys know how those rebates work?
I know. No, tell me.
That somebody actually tried to do it.
Right.
You got to take something from the 12-pack, right? You've got to copy it. You have to scan it and then copy it. You got to wait for your cable bill to come, and then you got to mail them together.
How
people actually do the rebates? It's not Golden Boy giving back the rebate. It's not even really Tecate.
No,
what they do is they take an insurance policy out on. Basically, they do like an actuary. They calculate the number of people that they think are going to do a rebate. They take an insurance policy against that, and then they use that to pay the rebate. So just a bit of knowledge. I'm not saying it's shady and it's rebated. If you want to go through the process, then go for it. You know, get money.
And they are banking on the fact that not too many people are going to want their $20.
Well, the way it's set up, there's going to be a lot of people not doing it and stuff. You know.
So in that aspect, okay. I think
$30 for crap is still $30 for crap. You know,
the fights aren't
going to be exciting. And anybody that really honestly thought that Diaz, Casamayor, or Rocky Juarez. I'm sorry. I'm hitting with you with a counterpoint. I'm not worried if Monica Sears is listening and doesn't like it. I've been going back and forth with her on angry email all day. I'm not a publicist. I'm a journalist. And I'm going to call it honestly the way I see it. Anybody picking Casamayor to win needed a time machine because 4 years ago he might have been worth it. Anybody thinking that Rocky Juarez was going to win needed to check what weight he was always effective at. It wasn't the weight he was fighting. And they needed to see the 6 other title shots that he tried and failed in. It was exactly the way I called it.
Well,
he won the last two rounds and then failed.
In my defense, okay, I picked Rocky because I thought it was going to go 12, not 10.
Good point.
I can't help you there,
good
Dave.
Point.
No, could help.
Let's just get back to the point.
He's never been a one-punch knockout fighter. He's never been a one-punch guy except when he was coming up.
But he's been
up.
A guy that can wear you down in the later rounds where if a lot of guys don't stand and trade with Rocky, you know what I'm saying, where they use their legs and their hand speed a lot more because – you're right. He's not a one-punch knockout artist, but he's one of those guys that does do well going to the body and coming back.
And
head.
We didn't know what we had in Linares. We really didn't know. And I think we got an answer from both. I don't think we'll ever see Rocky anywhere near a pay-per-view, anywhere near an HBO fight. And we're going to see Linares again, who I actually enjoyed watching. I think the kid's got skills. I think the kid's got movement. And the kid could take a punch because he did take some punches from Rocky. So I think, for me, I got the answer I was looking for. Is Linares the real deal? Yes, I think he is. Is Rocky not the fighter we expected? Yeah, I think he's not. I think it's time. His time is gone. And
Rocky's Rocky. I don't think the time has caught up with anything.
I think
Rocky's Rocky. That's it.
Yeah, but I think his window is gone. I will say it that way.
I think that.
But to get back to the point, to the aggressive pricing. You know that the tickets for the Mora Mosley fight, the most expensive ticket is $200, and that's ringside. The majority of the tickets are going to be within the $20 to $75 range. I want to say, that's aggressive, and that's going to bring seats. I think they need to take that same model to the pay per view and say, hey, you know what, at $60.
we can't justify this. If we put it at, say, 45 or 44.90, whatever, 44.99, I think you get more of an interest, and I think the perception is, hey, you know what, they realize that this isn't the stellar pay-per-view that is, I don't know, Mosley Mayweather, Pacquiao Mayweather, blah, 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 blah. So we're going to price it aggressively. I think that goes a long ways towards building creativity within the pay-per-view market, because it is flawed. I mean, pay-per-view is flawed. Whereas you get people complaining about Grant versus Adamek, there are people who are kind of glad that it's on pay-per-view because it doesn't take up a TV slot that, you know, could have gone towards a more competitive fight. This is the polar opposite. You know, this is a total polar opposite. This is a pay-per-view that needs to be on pay-per-view simply because they cannot pay the minimums to have it on an HBO. But in turn, nobody really wants to pay $60 to see these guys fight.
No, nobody does, you know.
Be aggressive. Give your fans something back. And really reward them for saying, hey, look, we know we've had crappy pay-per-views, and we're trying. You know, we gave you a fairly decent pay-per-view. Now we're going to try to see if we can lower the price to bring more people in. You know, and I think that's more creative. And I think people, you know, I think the people of the powers that be get a little too stuck in their old ways and think that there always has to be a $60 pay-per-view since, you know, we're Golden Boy. We charge this much. Or we're Top Rank. We charge this much. Also, one thing I really wanted to bring up really, really quick, the concept of having the stream or the free TV prior to this, I kind of expanded upon it. I actually think what should be happening, if you're going to do a pay-per-view like this where you're going to have more than one TV venue, have two fight cards on one night. Have two fight cards on one card. Make four fights from opening bell to the first main event, one TV fight for available for the fans who want to see this, and use that as a commercial towards the pay-per-view. If you really want to pay for this pay-per-view, this is the type of level of fights we're going to have.
Exactly.
And then if they didn't, they got a free show.
Yeah, give us the opportunity to make that choice.
Give us some creativity in this. Mm-hmm. I think that's the problem I have with pay-per-views and big-time promoters kind of sitting on their ass and not trying to be creative with this. You know, I think a two-card could work where you give one to free TV and you say, hey, you really want to see more? Buy the pay-per-view. You know, it's a teaser. It's one of those things where you bring crowds in. And I don't think they're, you know, these big promoters are thinking too outside of the box.
Of course not. And it goes back to well, why do we need to think outside of the box if we're getting secure dates and monies from a particular network?
Well, I agree
that's
with
what
that.
Up. That's what screws us up.
But see, I'm not about to crap on a card that, in its intent, was trying to be fairly competitive and interesting. You know, I'd much rather crap on March 13th and May 1st for the crappiness that those cards were, rather than this
one. I don't see how last weekend was competitive or interesting in any way, shape.
But there were plenty of other people. You're not the be-all, end-all, Gabe. You're not the only one with that opinion. I mean, there are people who thought that there were some interesting matchups.
And you're not the only person that thinks the way you do, man. I'm sorry. But there's a lot of people that are upset about it. And let me finish. You've been going for about 10 minutes now.
Poor Gabe.
You're the one that bitched and said, let me finish.
Poor Gabe.
Don't get him to get on his Twitter. Go ahead.
We're in a major recession right now, and the prices are going up rather than down.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Like Ernie said, 45, that is reasonable. 45 for last weekend would have been reasonable. Maybe even
is
40.
That reasonable? I don't think that's still reasonable. I mean, come on. No, you could still make
it the number out.
It's been 50 for a long time. It's been 50 for as long as I can remember. Maybe 39.95 at one point, but it's steadily risen. But we're in a major recession, and this is a blue collar sport. These are blue collar people that are watching these pay per views. You know, I mean, when I'm not covering a fight and I got to watch a pay per view, I go and hang out with a bunch of people. You know, this is something that really needs to be addressed. And instead, the card's going up. And my problem is that when you're sitting there, and granted it's a promoter, it's their job, but you're trying to convince me that these are good fights. And I'm sorry, but that's insulting to my boxing intelligence. It just really is.
And you know what? I got to say this because I'm looking at the time, and wow, it kind of flew by. We only got 80 seconds left before we're off the air and stuff. And just kind of go back. If you guys missed the entire show with Amir Khan, Freddie Randy Rocha. Mo Harris coming on, speaking to us, and then you had
Alex Thompson, Alex Capanova from Thompson Boxing.
Uh-huh. And then we also had what was the Gabe? I'm sorry, I got your friend's name that from the UK scene.
The writer Julian Kazim, as well as Maurice Harris,
who came on Julian came on and did do something, said something exclusive. Same thing with Felipe.
Hurry!
You can all cast that back on Leave It in the Ring on the archives and stuff. And but really quick, man. And I'm just gonna put in my two cents and stuff. And I agree with Gable's saying a lot, and I agree on somewhat level on what you're saying, Ernesto. You know, but it kind of takes me back into that Wayne's World thing. Remember back in Wayne when he's out in the desert and the guy goes, you know, do this and do this, and they will come. The same thing with the promoters. If you give us a lot more than what we're getting from, we will come. You know what I'm saying? Making us leave. We're not. Anyways, I'm your host, Dave Duenas. You got Gabriel Montoya, Ernesto Gavion. I'll see you guys next week.
I love you, Ernesto. Take care.
Kiss ass.
Just keep it real. I have big love for that.
Are you still there? Dave, are you still there?
Hold on. We got to get off.